Hello, you're listening to episode 48 of the Lincoln Cast for June 21st, 2013. My name is Thurbleton, and I am super tired after a long week of work, so I'm going to be eating on this sorry episode. Breaking the taboo of podcasting is one hungry person. Joins me today on this episode. That's going to be Lincoln Cast starting off,
yep,
and then we'll break to a Scotch Cast.
Yep.
Is Squiddle. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, ladies and gentlemen. I guess I'm the proverbial center wheel of a reliant robin, so I'm proud to grace their presence.
Well, if the podcasts, like the hosts, were a reliant robin combined,
yeah,
you would be the center wheel.
Uh-huh.
And to sort of visualize that, Cynic joined with us today as well. Could you sort of... What are reliant robins known for?
For being really reliant in always flipping when you turn a corner.
Just flipping, like just completely just going on its side or over?
Well, okay. You're not supposed to drive a reliant robin like you do a normal car. It's not really... like, you'd think with a stool, three legs is what you need to be stable. And 3 points is usually the most stable kind of basic... Why am I going to structural engineering? Whatever. Reliant robins are hilarious. You can watch them flip on Mr. Bean and shows like Top Gear, and they're awesome.
Yep. All right. So, I should really stop eating. It's Guild Wars 2. It's an awesome game that we love to talk about, and there's been a lot of cool updates for it.
Mm-hmm.
Starting off with, they've made a book, a third book. Sea of Sorrow.
Book.
Which actually,
Bree
Soesby, who is one of, like, she is not the head of the lore department for Guild Wars 2,
mm-hmm,
but she's, like, the co-head, I guess, of it.
Sure.
I don't know. She's been working ever since Guild Wars 1 Oracle was unannounced.
Yay.
I think.
Yay.
So, I guess, Cynic, do you want to start going into this while I finish this meal?
Wait, okay, so I'm going to quickly Google Bree Soesby to see if she actually has a bibliography.
I listened to a Guild Wars Insider podcast, since they it's now defunct podcast, but I really like the people who did it. But she has done a lot of short stories and I think a lot of stuff for just other games, not necessarily video games, but just like the game genre.
Really cool person. I wonder if she's the one who did the short stories that they used to put up on the blogs. Because they weren't bad. They weren't terrible.
I know she made a story that was, I think it was just in office, but it might have broken out, that was what's Logan and Ritlock? What's the band they're called?
Oh, Destiny's Edge.
Yeah, it's Destiny's Edge as if it were a raid party. So,
okay.
Logan is like the raid leader. It's like, all right, guys, let's make sure we have all this stuff together and everything.
Fucking Logan.
You know, Air's the raid leader.
So a lot of banter and yelling, essentially.
Yeah, Ritlock's like, hey, I want to go in. I want to fight the boss. And Logan's gone AFK. His doctor's got girlfriend aggro.
That's cool.
And it was just all back and forth. It was very funny.
That sounds awesome.
We're not sure how good she is at writing whole novels related to everyone's favorite city hub in Guild Wars 2, Lion's Arch. Which is what the story's about.
Yeah, because I pushed for this to be our first topic only because I want to put out caution vibes, because if you've listened to Linking Cast for a while, which if you have, God bless you, because goddamn, we do not do a quality show.
We try,
but that's not saying much.
We understand our flaws.
Yeah.
Accepting of them.
Yeah. So I've me and Nubarama are the book readers of this show, with Thurbleton coming up a close third, and I've been pretty vocal in that I have a pretty deep appreciation of the fantasy genre, but my appreciation has not ever extended to any of the Guild Wars 2 or Guild Wars related books. I think they're all fucking terrible in a way that, like, it. 16-year-old, like, high school, like, creative writing, assignments is kind of like how I'd characterize the quality of the books related to the Guild Wars universe so far. But having Googled her and seeing that this is her first book in Guild Wars stuff, like, I think this is the first book, Guild Wars book she's written in general, as we just discussed, that maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a chance this isn't complete garbage.
This book has had a really troubled history, too, because...
Has it?
I think it has, like, had an original plot where they had to, like, gut out a lot of the stuff and change authors and hand over to Rhys Soasby.
Right.
Right about the time that Rhys was going to, like, go, like, Guild Wars 2 was getting ready to ship, and so they were advertising all over the world. Like, I remember she was at Germany while she was, like, still trying to work on the book at Gamescom. Yeah, that sounds like a German convention.
You're dropping way more knowledge about this book than I thought you had.
I know a lot about Guild Wars 2.
Okay, go ahead. Keep going. Keep going.
That stuff. But yeah, it's so she was half like working on it as well as working on the game that they were about to ship. But what something that was really awesome about it, and a lot of this knowledge I got from listening to just the Guild Wars Insider podcast, was she was like when they sent it in to get editing, she was basically waiting for herself to approve the book or approve that draft that she'd done.
That's the worst.
So that was a silly bit, but that was like, what, 9 months ago? So
right.
I guess printing out a novel takes a lot of time. But if you want, you can buy this right now. So look into just the lore of it. If you like the Guild Wars lore, if you don't mind stomaching a kind of bad story.
Maybe I'm a book snob.
Maybe you are.
Yeah, maybe I'm terrible. And if you like the previous Guild Wars 2 novels, then more power to you. Go ahead and order this. You can get a signed copy if you live in the States, I think.
The idea of it, I think, is kind of nice, where it's – the plot of the story, where it's the guy who founds Lion's Arch. Because anybody who doesn't know, Lion's Arch was originally a only human settlement that was wiped away when Zaitan rose and got flooded. And so this is the story of a guy who was just like a captain on a ship or something who travels around the Tyria, the world, realizing that like interacting with the other races and realizing that they are vitally important and needed to work together. And that's what he bases his life's journey on. Like his experiences on founding Lion's Arch, and like it's a city for everyone, which is a fancy way of saying it's the trade hub of the game.
Yeah,
but it's cool.
Kobaya seems to be the person this is based on.
Yes, I wasn't going to try pronouncing that.
That's how I would pronounce it if I was to put a fantasy spin on Kobaya. So, yeah, no, I think Rhys is cool. I haven't been like the biggest person in favor of any of the Guild Wars fiction, even outside the books. But hey, may as well give it a chance. I might give it a chance if the reviews are good. So yeah, there you go.
All right,
let's move on to a topic that actually matters.
Yeah, well, the next topic, the actual one that, well, I mean, fractal updates are cool. We'll get to that next, but. Mm-hmm. The one on our list that is the most intriguing for me is updates coming to Or in the way of a new dynamic event scaling system.
Yeah, it's uber cool.
Cynic knows the most about this.
I don't know anything about it aside from what I read, but it's Colin Johansson kind of told us a bit about it in some of his answers to questions posed to him by the community, and essentially he's outlining that the continual changes being made to Or to make it fun, because they haven't quite hit that balance yet, and I still avoid Or like the plague in the few times, admittedly, that I've played Guild Wars 2 in the last couple of months.
As much as we love the architecture and just like the general vibe of this like undersea, almost like future apocalypse place that the art environment team has made, the events there suck.
Yeah,
and the events suck. Going around there suck.
Yeah, but anything that could bring me back to doing planks farming, I would be more than happy to go back to that 19 hours of doldrums. So hopefully it'll bring something.
So
it's hard to tell if you're being serious.
So I really did enjoy doing planks farming. It was kind of fun because it was a pattern. It was a regiment that you did from here to here. You did these semi events that happened, you know, the brood mother witch or the snake or salamander thing, whatever it was. And it was kind of fun. You know, it popped up, you go do it, you run back and forth. And it was kind of something fun to keep doing over and over. And I did enjoy it for a part. And then once they kind of nerfed it to the point where it wasn't as fun as it was.
It wasn't fun. It wasn't rewarding.
Yeah. Everybody stopped doing it. And so it was gone. So hopefully they will bring stuff back like that where you can have, and I enjoy the mass of people that show up in one area and do it. And you have that little bit of chance and maybe they'll make it a better chance of when you tag something, you can get a good reward from it, which would be great.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully they bring more people back. Cause I did like the area. I liked that area of ore and I would like to be able to go back sometime.
Yeah.
Something else I think that, I'm reading in the post that Colin says is he like, and of course we'd like to remove culling from PE as well. So you experience these events in all their glory when they scale up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you guys know about this, but when they did the fix for culling in PV or in War versus World, and that didn't immediately transfer over to PVE, the reason why is because in War versus World, it's mostly just players. I mean, like, yeah, there's, like mobs and like and enemy NPCs and all that, but those are few and far between. Whereas there's the PvE world, there's so much more of that and all these other effects that's why it's harder to take care of calling in PvE. So that's something. It's nice to see there's something they're working on because that would give potential for something like a new Karka event that actually works.
That actually works. That's very important to add that part to it.
They're working on making it to smooth and not crappy.
Yeah.
By taking care of calling.
But that's not the reason I was excited. So the reason I was excited was because the new dynamic event scaling system sounds freaking cool. In that, because it's actually not just for ore, it's supposed to be applying to the whole game. But for one, like there's plenty of instances in Guild Wars 2 where there's like a holding the point mission or a capturing a position mission or things along those lines, like just movement around the map or moving around specific areas where there's predefined NPCs that spawn or respawn that challenge you in a specific point, right? So what currently happens, to my understanding, is when there's a bunch of people in an area doing a specific dynamic event, then it just kind of spawns more dudes.
I can confirm this.
Yeah, it just spawns more dudes, and it's not fun.
It's not necessarily it spawns more of the same dudes.
Yeah.
In the same locations.
Yeah.
So it's like you instead of having three guys walk up from like you know straight ahead into either side,
mm-hmm.
it's like four guys per in a pack. It's four guys in front of you, four guys to the right, and four guys to the left, and so you just AOE the same spots, and they just die insanely fast.
Yeah.
One of the jokes we did when as a guild we ran around in one of the swamp zone south of Lion's Arch, we did mass genocide to pirates. We killed like 300 pirates in the course of like 30 minutes, 45 minutes.
Exactly. That's the kind of stuff that happens now. But what they're doing instead is that they're doing what I thought would make most sense, which is when there's more people in an area, it's instead of just spawning more dudes, it starts spawning more powerful enemies. So you have champions coming in, bronze and gold champions coming in. And
sweet.
That sounds awesome. And also,
that would be awesome.
Yeah. And beyond that, they're actually increasing.
That sounds like something that is actually meant to scale.
Yeah. Like real scaling for shit. And they're also increasing the rewards those higher end NPC, sorry, enemy characters give you. So not only having more people in an area would make an event significantly more challenging because it starts spawning more powerful dudes, but having more people in an area almost guarantees better drops in its shit for everyone as well. So doing stuff in a group, doing stuff in a guild sounds like it'd be even better now. Finally. Dear God. Like, it's
my
always
one worry
been
for this is people will just go into a zone and ask, where is the Zerg?
Yeah.
But time will tell if it comes to that or if that is too much of a demanding thing. Like, the only way to get stuff done is to get in a Zerg.
Or, you know what?
Hopefully,
like,
I don't think that'll be the case.
I would love it if they get it to a point where it scales to the point that being in a Zerg is just as hard as doing it in a small number of people. Oh, because, yeah. Like, say, like, 30 people are doing an event, and suddenly pretty much everything it spawns is, like a gold-level champion. That would be awesome.
But we can always hope that with the new map APIs that were released, somebody will have it known that you can just go out there and go look at the website and go, hey,
right.
This is where the Zerg is, and just run right there. You don't even have to ask for it, you know? Yeah.
Exactly.
Free up the chat room.
There's an app for that.
There's an app for that. So yeah, this sounds really cool. And again, like as I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, stuff like this is what I'm excited to see, because when the next big content dump hits, stuff like this will go significantly towards improving like the Guild Wars First expansion experience. Because when a bunch of players come back, like people like myself who don't really play regularly come back, they'll come back and see all these awesome changes. And I cannot wait to see like a whole new swath of content with this new scaling system in it. Because I have to say, like, centaurs are like the most fucking boring shit to fight in Guild Wars 2 proper, like original. Especially,
I don't know, dredge are pretty boring.
Dredge. Yeah. Well, the dredge are cool because when their more powerful units have like AoE effects and like crazy stuff they can do, like the weird like, I hate dredge. Don't get me wrong, but like when...
Okay, I'll give you that. They're not boring. They're just a pain.
They're more unique than...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Centaurs are just dudes with hooves, and they come in huge packs, and it's always fucking boring, especially the amount of like early on hold this point against swarms of centaurs missions. It's just fucking crappy.
I mean, yes, but at the same time, centaurs are the ones that are I most enjoy fighting in a melee fashion, like the ones that are the brawlers, because they almost always have some televised attack.
Yeah,
that is true. Okay, I'm actually using the dodge and dodge function as it's intended. This is really enjoyable.
Sure. But yeah, now when these events go forward, like new events like that show up, it'll be kind of cool because you'll have more champions and shit showing up, and that'll be interesting. And
oh, geez,
I'm always a fan. Man. Always a fan of making a game hard.
I'm thinking of the Maw. No, it's not the Maw. Yes, the Maw, but also the Fire Elemental.
Oh yeah,
events that everyone does. Yeah. What if like just as they're getting ready for the Fire Elemental? That event where you protect the guy beforehand is just all champions.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
That would
about.
Be insane.
That's what I'm talking about. So it depends like how deep they go in this. Like, will they let it scale to the point where it'll just be fucking champion spawning? Because I hope they do, but they won't. Like, I don't... Arena has been pretty forward with their... they haven't really presented anything Guild Wars 2 that's been especially challenging. And when they have... they've scaled back on it, except for obviously the explorable mode dungeons, which are there because they want them to be challenging. In things in PvE, whenever I find something that's really awesome and challenging, like the Fire Elemental, they've always scaled it back. So I really do hope they stick to their guns and do like let it scale to the point where you just get crushed. Like there's a Zerg of 60 people, but they're actually having difficulty beating a mob, and that would be really cool. That would be really cool.
I don't think they'll do that. Because like they want to make the game for casuals, but I hope I hope there's a chance for it to spawn something like the old fire or flame shaman from
yeah.
Like, the Char Star Zone.
Yeah,
like, I hope they have like they have units that are specifically designed for fighting massive amounts of people.
With
something like, you know, it has reflection or what.
Sure,
it's been a long week. Guys.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Not even then, like that thing. That fire shaman or whatever it was called used to do a boatload of AoE damage. Just stupid, awesome amounts of AoE damage. That was actually pretty fair. Like, you could see him winding up. You can see that. But just seeing, like, a sea of corpses. I if you listen back to our beta discussions, the first couple of episodes of Linkin Cast, a frequent word that was used was a sea of corpses. And I want that to return. But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway. Anything else about this news topic? That was pretty much all I wanted to say on topic.
No, I mean, like, that sounds really exciting.
Yeah. I think it's cool.
Almost stole the burger. do we want to go, like, the next topic is Fractal updates, mm-hmm. which... Oh, sorry. Forcing it down. it looks like they're talking about, hey, all that temporary content will probably be showing up in Fractals, so much so that he even hinted, like... He more or less just outright said the Flame and Frost special dungeon that we saw, that was like the underground thing with the, like, it would drill a hole through the mountain, and you fought the, like, mech dredge and the giant char final fight would probably be showing up in Fractals in some cleaned up, more streamlined form, which is cool.
I guess. I'm happy they've reconfirmed that they are adding more Fractals. That's pretty much the only thing I'm taking away from this news, because that, I never played the Flamefrost stuff, and probably for good reason, because I didn't really hear too much positive about it. But yeah, it's good to hear them reconfirming that they are going to add stuff to Fractals, because Fractals is some of the best stuff in Guild Wars 2.
Do you think they would actually reach back into the lore further and pull more stuff into Fractals, or are they just going to try to, you know, go with what, you know, hey, this was a great event we did 4 months ago, let's add it to a Fractal now? Because I find it interesting playing, because I never played Guild Wars 1, so I find it very interesting playing in the Fractals and all the stuff that happened in the past. You kind of, you know, reenact, essentially, in some of the Fractals.
And like, I think one of my favorite Fractals is, in fact, the one where you're, it's in between Guild Wars 1 and 2, but it's the one where you're more or less attacking Ascalon City.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, that is one of the few examples where they did actually delve into their known past and let us play through it. That was actually one of the coolest Fractals in there, but they haven't done too much of that. A lot of the Fractals, especially the best Fractal, which is the Blizzard one, that's pretty much straight, pure Fractal exclusive stuff. Like, we haven't seen that anywhere else. So I hope going forward they do a mix like they have been, which is like maybe one new Fractal from an event they've done, one from the past, the known past of Guild Wars 1, and then one entirely new one with a good team on it that can make it really nice, like the Blizzard one. And I hope that's what they do going forward. I also hope they don't just add like one Fractal every 6 months, because fuck off. Like, when those huge, like the first dump of Fractals hit, that was awesome, and I really hope they do kind of push them out like three at a time, something like that, like to give us a bunch of like a wave of new content rather than individuals.
I think what's more likely going to happen is they're going to keep with the like the Living Story thing, breaking into small teams, any dungeons that are made from that, because it's like, okay, we have for this month we have to like make something with this story. Mm-hmm. We have all these tools, we can do like, you know, a scavenger hunt around the world, we can do massive dynamic events, we can do a dungeon, we can do a jumping puzzle. What do we want to make for this month's update?
Right.
And then those that choose to make a like some sort of dungeon will probably, like, you know, then retroactively make that, like, just add that into the Fractals.
Well, yeah, like our Everblade Retreat, which is for the stuff we haven't talked about yet, the Sky Pirates Eteria, that's probably going to end up in a Fractal, if I'm guessing.
Yeah. I'm guessing you're probably right. Yeah. But then also, what there's that base camp that Josh Foreman was talking about, where it's like any developer who isn't directly working on something is just in this like playground area making up, like designing something neat.
Yeah.
And so hopefully if someone comes to, like, you know, Colin or Izzy or one of the brass and says like, hey, I got this idea for a cool dungeon. It's bigger than a mini dungeon sort of thing. Like, it's bigger than a guild puzzle. I want to make an actual dungeon. They're like, all right, well, we'll put you in base camp for a little bit. You can work on the design, and then that, like, if that gets fleshed out into something awesome, we'll see that in a Fractal.
Yeah,
and
that would be
much
cool.
Much more unlikely to like to come out, but like that is hopefully something that will happen. It's like, oh, it's really like this fight from Guild Wars 1, and I recreated it in Guild Wars 2, and it's fun, guys.
Mm-hmm. To me. Aside from really breakout surprises like the Blizzard event, the Guild Wars 1 stuff has always been the most interesting stuff. Like, running around the world and seeing like throwbacks to Guild Wars 1, the Fractals for Guild Wars 1 has always been more interesting. Of course, I'm part of a small community, I guess, of Guild Wars 1 players who are still playing, or relatively still playing Guild Wars 2. Like, me and Noob were like the most excited about that kind of stuff in this group. Exactly. Like, I hope they do add like a bunch more off the wall content from base camp, because some of the stuff coming out of base camp is the most interesting stuff that we've seen in Guild Wars 2 coming out. So yeah, totally.
Fractals, they're pretty cool.
Fractals are pretty cool, I guess.
I like Fractals.
What's your favorite Fractal, Squiddle?
Blue Man, as I call it, Cliffside.
Cool. I call that Dr. Manhattan, but yeah, the Blue Man.
Yeah, Blue Man, Manhattan, and Cliffside. I love that. A lot of people hate it, but I find that probably the most enjoyable fractal out of all of them.
That shares a lot of things like Portal in that it's a puzzle element, but it's also very, it's just long and like enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like too much puzzling would get really annoying.
Yeah.
And the reset isn't too bad when it works. Sometimes you will fall infinitely through the sky and end up in a bed of roses.
Yeah, like me.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would really like that fractal if it didn't have jumping in it. So
it was, yeah. I would really like that fractal if the second section wasn't as, like, that is by far the toughest section for me. It's the one with, like, the three fire sections, like three fire circles. And it's just a pain. There's, like, we usually get through it, but it's, like, we sometimes will wipe once or, I don't know.
But
the other ones, they're pretty straightforward mechanics. I like them.
I just want to add before we move on to the next topic that I think adding more fractals is a good thing because, like Josh, when he was on here, he talked about the rarefication of the player base if you add a bunch of parallel content for people to play because people will spread themselves thin over that. I think that adding more fractals is a good move because there is a dedicated fractal community and the people outside of that community tend to just like show up, see the new stuff, and then leave. So it doesn't really add to that rarefication. It's just kind of there always, but not detracting from anything else.
More so like the element of it being, it's a random like show up. Like you get a random set of three.
Yeah.
So there's not really like people won't go too far out of their way to just keep trying to get that like cool new fractal.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So yeah, I mean, it's, oh God.
Cool.
Shin Boy.
What's happening with Shin Boy? Is he coming?
No. His official reason for not being on today's podcast is because he is too busy reading his newly discovered copy of the sure-to-be Pulitzer Prize-winning novelization, Guild Wars Sea of Sorrows by Rhys Oosby.
Excellent.
Lincoln Cast.
And in 2 weeks,
you will have Guild Wars 2 podcast.
In 2 weeks, he will have a book review for all you listeners out there.
I'm so excited.
God, I love doing this podcast. All right. Next topic. This is no more for fractals.
He asked it. Yeah. Let's move on.
All right. Squiddle seems pretty excited about Custom Arenas leaving the beta.
Yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. For me, I like slow low spectator mode. I did it a couple times watching people.
It's cool, right?
I agree with that. Spectator mode is cool.
Yeah.
It's like they talked about like how difficult it is to actually have a free roaming camera that won't glitch its way through the environment.
Which is fine.
And they're trying to work on that.
Yeah.
My guess is like if you like to have the camera not have any identity or like any play on the field also means that it can also freely go through the environment, and so they're trying to find a way to code that into their system that is probably as difficult as calling.
Sure.
Yeah. So maybe I need some clarification. When they say custom arenas, does that mean is custom arenas basically people who you want to join can join?
You are paying ArenaNet to host your private server. So you can do whatever you want within the parameters they will provide, which unfortunately is a lot less than we originally thought when we first talked about.
But we always have crazy ideas for how these things can
go. We always go for pie in the sky, hoping that it's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is. Yeah. Sometimes it's really cool.
See, you know, what I would
try and stay positive on this podcast.
Uh-huh.
Right. And opposed to, I mean, when they said that it was going to be gem store purchases, which you know I had not seen any of that information prior to the post that recently went up. I was kind of hoping it would be something like, you know, if you're a part of a guild and you do a lot and you partake in a lot of guild events as a guild, you could have access to custom arenas for free, essentially, or, you know, for whatever price with the in-game. I did not know it was going to be based on, you know, a gem store, which, I mean, technically it could be in-game gem store. You know, you want to do the trading of gold for gems, which you could do. But I was kind of thinking maybe it was going to be like, you know, something that your guild people, your guild leaders and everything could say, you know, we want to work up towards this and then spend, you know, guild tokens or whatever it is to be able to do custom arenas.
On the one side, yes, I get that. On the other, it's like it's the whole like Microsoft and Sony going for like to play on our servers, you have to pay the like you know the monthly thing. Where in
sure.
on the PC, there's if like Battlefield or something or Minecraft, it's like the servers cost money to run. So I can see them sort of. Plus, they would make it so everyone would just have a custom arena, and that would flood the gate.
Yeah,
so
right. Maybe part of it is definitely they want to limit, like, because there's already a shitload on there, right? And if they open up for other people, they want to limit it from just being an infinite amount of custom arenas. Because I'm telling you right now, like, if it was free, I would have made like a couple already just to play around with them and see how it is. And then I'm not sure if I'd ever bother deleting them. But here, like, the only thing else they could do that maybe would make sense is if they, like, limit it to one custom arena per account, right? And that's and kind of too limiting in some ways.
Yeah. What's the most bumming out of all of this, it's something, like, I don't think ArenaNet has, like, formally talked about. If they are, please, like, let us know on Twitter or email us, thelickingcast@gmail.com. But it's that, like, you pay for gems for these, and you can get gems by like trading in gold for gems or paying real money.
Yeah.
But there's no way in which a person who exclusively does structured PvP, which the only currency in there is glory, mm-hmm. to transfer that into gems.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. We've had this discussion on here in the past, and it's been a lot of people don't realize, a lot of people forget that only really PvE can give you gems. And that's really weird.
But do we know that if let's say you buy this starter kit for a custom arena for gems, mm-hmm. does that last indefinitely? Is that for
the starter kit comes with 30 days of playtime?
Yeah, okay, hours based. Then,
is that it?
Hours based?
No, I mean like it's 30 days we get of playtime with the starter kit, but then from there on you buy hours by gems.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then it's whatever like match you're playing in, like they get free time or something.
Yeah.
Like, they get time added onto it, however long you're playing in there.
Yeah. Okay. So, it's like, it's a system, and that works I can't name other games that use it, but I know that hour-based systems do work, and they have worked for quite a while, so.
I guess if you have a guild that's big enough.
Like, the model they have, it works. It makes sense, and it's good design, except for that whole, the people who enjoy it most will have the hardest time using the system.
Yeah, and unless they like get donations from their guild members, it's just hard for like the people who just PvP to get gems. Of course, if they pay real money, which is what ArenaNet wants you to do. Like, there's a reason they haven't put a glory equivalent expenditure to get more hours. I wouldn't be surprised if they eventually, because they've always played around with giving having gems in tournament rewards, and they've always said that that was an option on the table, but I don't think they've ever actually done it. But what they can do is have like a craftable, a Mystic Forge recipe for like the time extender based off PvP equipment. Like they might do something like that. I wouldn't be surprised, which would be good.
That would work, or just like a vendor that you would buy an item that wouldn't translate like with the gem store, but you could use it to, it was like another way to get hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like exorbitant, like huge cost of glory, but at least have the option there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's how I would do it. And we'll see if they do, but so far they haven't said anything along those lines, sadly.
The second biggest bummer for this is that there's no, keg brawl. Which is, it's a mini game that lets you, like, it gets you glory and skill ups in structured PvP. But it's not available in the custom arenas. And I just really want to host a keg brawl tournament.
Yeah, you've been pining for that for a while.
I think that I really want to shoutcast a keg brawl tournament.
That would be pretty awesome.
It would be pretty cool. But I think it's good. It's kind of a non-news item because this has been in the plans for quite a while. We've talked about custom arenas for a while, but it's good to see it's finally leaving beta. So, yay. Mm-hmm.
So now we come to the mainest of the topics.
I'm so sad Chimboy isn't here because none of us are equipped to talk about this.
This sounds like something.
It's like a gallant horse that rides into the night.
Sky guys, sky pirates.
Sky pirates fly from the sky and will tear down your main faster than you want.
Thank you, Squiddle.
I think that is my Squiddle's impression of this news is my favorite part of this news.
So coming June 25th, about the time this podcast comes out, Sky Pirates of Tyria, Lion's Arch is in chaos. They're called the Ether Blades. Who are the Ether Blades? Is the news post on GuildWars2.com.
They're Sky Pirates. Surprise.
Yeah.
Monocles.
Well, it's just
monocles.
Okay, wait. So
steampunk airships. Lightning.
So when Shinboy came up to me and said Sky Pirates, I was like, shrug, don't give a fuck. But then I read there's one part about this that is actually sounds really cool to me, which is Inspector Ellen Keel spearheaded the investigation into the murder, and she's now gathering teams of deputies to capture the perpetrator. And if you look at the aesthetic
Ellen Keel being the deputy in charge of the Karka event. So it's nice to see.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was wrong about it being a whole new cadre of Destiny's Edge, but mm-hmm. they are bringing these mini like NPCs that
people,
are recurring and they're developing lore on them.
Yeah, and I think so. What this came from is someone was murdered as part of Dragon Bash, which I never sadly participated in, but I don't really care either way. So someone the
Dragon Ball was cool.
Yeah, so someone was murdered in that, and that is the transition piece towards this new piece of news, and that is pretty cool that that's a pretty cool way of doing that. And the investigation side of it kind of reminds me of my favorite Mass Effect 2 DLC, which is I believe it was Shadow Broker, where you do a investigation at the start. Because if you look at the the cinematic that's been up on YouTube for quite a while now, related to the Sky Pirates thing, it's like this noir take on Guild Wars 2, which is like just like straight up like detective fiction stuff in Guild Wars 2, and I think that's fucking cool. Whether that translates to the actual gameplay related to this like monthly content, like I seriously doubt it, but I like at least the stepping off point for it, because this murder investigation is kind of awesome. But Sky Pirates, yo, Sky Pirates.
Yep, Sky Pirates also coming out in the next month's patch. Jumping puzzle. New jumping puzzle. Josh Foreman said that he was working on the, what did he say, June or July update.
Like
I'm pretty much hoping that this is his puzzle. plus, it sounds like something he would make, because there's a lot of walls and terrain that is that does not have collision. You can walk through it.
Right.
Which anybody who may have done the jumping puzzle in Lion's Arch, Sharkmaw Cavern, he made that. And he, like, in that puzzle, he has, like, these invisible walls that you can walk through. Well, visible walls, but you get the idea.
They're visible until you touch them, and then they become invisible.
This has to be Josh Foreman. It also says...
Diving goggles.
Improve your prowess by using a pair of hard-to-find diving goggles.
Yep.
Dude, pushed for diving goggles to be in the game. This is... I'm so psyched for this jumping puzzle!
The main thing I want to point out is it's a permanent jumping puzzle. So this is staying in the game, which is, I guess, cool.
I like how they said new permanent jumping puzzle. So like, oh, you guys are mad about temporary content? Boom, permanent.
Yeah, it's permanent. But I've been, again, pretty vocal in my saying, fuck jumping puzzles. But you, Thurbleton, you seem pretty happy about this.
So. I enjoy jumping puzzles.
Yeah.
I love them.
I enjoy... The hidden stuff, which most commonly becomes jumping puzzles.
Considering part of this is find your way in, that sounds pretty cool. It sounds like they'll actually make it semi-hidden in a lot of ways, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, no. The Guild Wars wiki already says where the entrance is.
Oh, no.
At least the waypoint near it.
Well, it's called Holographic Mountain. Like, I bet that won't be the only instance of you trying to find, like, crazy ways through things. So that'd be cool.
Very true.
Yeah.
It's what few, like, mini dungeons they've added that are not jumping puzzles don't work completely. Or, like, don't, like, there's
Garrett and Fields. I'm sure I mispronounced that. Like the top middle one with the spider cave.
Right.
There's like traps in the back that, like, I have no idea what they do. I've used, like, I've tested them multiple times. Maybe they're just an alternate way to open the door other than killing the champion spider. But come on, champion spider, you got to fight it. Mm-hmm. And then the frog one in Caledon Forest, which is really fun. If you haven't done it yet, I can't pronounce the name of it, but it's there's a awesome mini dungeon you should do with your guild called like Tears of Aquatl, or something like that. It's really fun. Got this really neat rule where you have to like match something, like match faces on a wall. That thing just doesn't work. You have to trial and error your way through it all.
Well, what was the jumping puzzle where they had like the little? They had the quaggins rescue you if you fell down. And they would heal you, and then you'd try it again, and then you would jump up to the.
Oh, it was the baby quaggin one in one of the Snowpeak ones.
Yeah, I loved that one. Never finished it though. I could never get to the top on
that. That is like a real massacre one where you're just jumping on these really small, like almost leaf things. But I want to say Dredge Haunt or maybe Timberline. I'm gonna go with Timberline.
It's the bottom right of Timberline. That this new Scavenger Hunt is also permanent. I'm just reading through this update now. Because fuck jumpy puzzles.
Scavenger Hunt?
Yeah, new Scavenger Hunt. 12 plaques have been set up to honor the history of the journey of the city and its founder. You can find clues to the plaques.
Oh, yeah.
So it's about Kabaya Mariner, which is kind of cool because it ties in with the book.
You mean about the Sea of Sorrows novel by Rhys Ousby, available now?
Yeah, that. And I think the only thing cool part of this, because fuck Scavenger Hunts too, you can find clues to the plaques locations in the Sea of Sorrows, which is kind of awesome. That's actually kind of cool. Of course, they'll be up on Wiki like next week, but it's still pretty
cool. I don't know. What's also cool about this is it sounds like they're working on making permanent scavenger hunts, which is a really cool part of the game that I wish they added more of. Also, what they said is they're wanting to make legendaries available or precursors available by way of a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Or some sort of like – so this looks like they're – trying out an early, like, maybe this is a good way.
This is how it always should have been. This is how it always, the precursors should always have been, like, this crazy thing you go out of your way for without.
Yeah, I really hope it's just some insane, like, what was it, Garon sword from Zelda?
I've never played a Zelda game.
the Goron sword, that's what it's called.
Okay.
It's this giant two-handed sword that you have to travel, like, across the world 20
Nerd.
Times. Yep. I have a shirt that says nerd with broken taped up glasses.
But yeah, no, it's but, sure. I think that's cool. Precursors being in Scavenger Hunts is cool, whether I care about Scavenger Hunts or not. And I think that the whole book tie-in, even though I question whether the quality of that book, I think it's pretty cool as well. So that's pretty cool. All around. So.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we just transitioned into the last topic of the Guild Wars 2 part of the podcast with, was it Izzy or a lot of the PvP guys came on the, or posted on Guild Wars 2 Guru, the forums, main page of guildwars2.com, talking about how they're making a lot of changes to skills, traits, adding some, like, a new condition.
Yeah.
Just a whole lot of changes that they're hoping will make the game more interesting in combat.
Yeah, and I haven't found a breakdown of the specific changes. I assume they just haven't released them yet at this point. I bet they'll just release them like fucking 10 minutes after this podcast goes up. But they detailed a new condition, which is
Torment. No, no, no. 10 minutes before this podcast goes up.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. But yeah, they released the details of a new condition, which is Torment, and I actually think it sounds really cool, which is it's a condition that's dots, but it increases damage if you move, and that's kind of interesting. And it increases intensity, which means the more stacks of it, the more it'll increase damage when you move. And that sounds, well, that's how I would do it. And that sounds really cool.
Like, you know what this reminds me of? The Bloodseeker, to anybody who's played Dota, or Defense Against the Ancients, Dota 2, whatever you want to call it.
Healing.
I played a long time ago.
There's nothing wrong with Dota. I just don't appreciate it.
Anyway, it's one of the one of his ultimates for the game was Ravage. I can't remember what the name of it was, but basically, the further you moved, the more damage you took.
Yeah,
and that, like, that has so many uses, but mm-hmm. ultimately is used for just killing noobs because they didn't realize what the ability yeah. did and usually ran to their deaths. Mm-hmm. But if everyone knows about this ability, it's going to be really cool because
yes.
if you're being chased, you pop it on them and then they have to choose whether to chase you. And if so, for how long before it's now there, they have to be the ones that are on the defensive.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, here's a question. So mm-hmm. if you have it on you,
yeah.
you're a thief like I am, and you do a move that would jump to them.
Will not affect. I bet it won't. I bet it won't affect.
I don't think teleportation type thing.
And I don't think it should. I think that's a valid workaround that should be left within the game because that's.
I think that's a tool that you have to use to counter it if you don't have something like scrub debuffs.
Yeah, I think that's. Well, what's your thought on Squiddle? We're talking over you. Do you think that's a good idea? Or?
Well, no. I mean, I would hope they would not do it because I mean, a lot of my main damage that I do is, you know, I will. I mean, I'll do my backstab or my jump to you, mm-hmm. and you know I will go invisible. Yeah, yeah, another backstab. But if you're away, I will do my thing that will basically teleport me to you. I'll do a short bow, you know, it was a 5-5 on the short bow, and get to you. I just don't know if that is something that they would take into account for. That would be damage. Mm-hmm. I mean, would that be one step of damage? Would that be however many distance you travel step of damage? And I'm just curious how they're gonna incorporate that.
I hope it's
especially for mesmers. If you jump from your clone to another clone, is that considered moving, you know, around? I mean, I'm interested to see how they do that.
Because if I was like just from a programming standpoint, I would just link it to WSD, like your actual character movement. In which case, if you are literally blowing a cooldown on moving, that should be a valid workaround. And I think that should be perfectly, you shouldn't take any damage from that, aside from the base dots, because it has a base dots and that increases when you move. So you'll still get that.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, and I look at it as it would also and allow for more team play, mm-hmm. Especially in WoW kind of aspect that, you know, if you get hit with it, you can't move as easily as mm-hmm. you would normally do. And so you would want to say, hey guys, I got someone on me. I can't move. Please get this guy off of me. And it would bring more of the, team rally, I guess, against instead of the lone wolf type aspect that is very prevalent in WoW in some occasions.
Like for me, the way I would hope this is done is if they give a necromancer a well that straight up just puts shit in that location, that anytime you walk through it, you get like 1 second off this debuff applied to you. So they'll actually have proper motherfucking area denial. Because this is like a next... Because we've always had... Well, from the start of Guild Wars 2, we've had ways of area denying, which are like line in the sand. They're like, Guardian, you cannot move any further. Or Mesmer, when you go past this point, you get like damage done to you, whatever. This is like straight up risk reward for which is an awesome mechanic in general. So if I'm a warrior, if I'm full health, I have 26,000 health or more, right? I can take a bit of dots. I can look at that risk reward ratio and say, fuck it, I think I can get my whatever it is, like the eviscerate off, even if I go through this stuff. But if you're running away from someone, you suddenly have to look at, you suddenly go, okay, I'm only got like 1,000 health left. I can't survive if I go through this area. Or like just straight up, if you just have like the debuff on you, say Necromancer casted it on you, you'd have to start thinking, okay, I can't run from this Necromancer, so fuck it, I'm going to blow all my cooldowns to kill that Necro as fast as I can or remove this condition as fast as I can. And those kind of like gameplay decisions is what makes PvP awesome. And it's cool that they're finally putting something like this in, because this is the first time in Guild Wars in general that I've seen this condition. This isn't a condition from Guild Wars 1. So it's actually, totally new and totally cool. I'm totally behind it.
And that's what I think all of us were really hoping for with, you know, Guild Wars 2, is that we get some kind of new kind of mechanics and new stuff. So, you know, if I never played Guild Wars 1, so, you know, if they're breaking the mold and doing this and bringing it into Guild Wars 2, mm-hmm. I'm all for that, to have some kind of new experience. So, you know.
I actually really like, too, that this is coming to the game not at launch.
Right.
Because people have had, like, months, almost a whole year to get in the habit of moving. And if they try, like, I've heard stories of people going back to, like, WoW and I guess Terra, Star Wars, like all these other games, and be like, I can't, like, I have to move.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I need to be able to move. And then being put in the position of, like, oh, snap, I can't move in the game I love to move around in.
Yeah, and this is cool for, on the flip side of things, because I can't wait, again, when the next huge dump of PvE stuff happens, if enemies get this, because that would be pretty cool. Like, if this becomes, like, a thing a lot of enemies can cast on players, that would be fun, because you start having that risk-reward in PvE as well, which could be
pretty fun. Oh, snap. Yeah. What if it's, like, a giant boss that is doing a big AoE?
Yeah.
And so you have to choose to either run away and take that damage for moving, or try and wait and dodge the AoE.
Yeah. Also,
like, do you think you're going to have to dodge it?
I think dodging should give you the damage, unlike teleportation.
Oh, no.
I think it should. Unlike teleportation,
all
I think
all I can
should.
Say, if that is true, that the Lupicus fight would be fucked.
Well, they're not going to put this
in. Let's say that Lupicus
fight,
had
right?
it, though. Let's say that if he had it, then, I mean, in that case, you know, that's a scenario where if you have to dodge.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no
way
about
it. The awesome thing about dodge is that you are invulnerable, but, like, it's that whole risk versus reward. You are invulnerable for, like, the 1.5 second you're doing it, but you can only do it so often.
Yeah, exactly. And if this can punish you, if this it just adds to that and goes, okay, you can dodge, but you'll take like 500 damage from dodging, that could be really interesting.
I mean, like, it is really interesting, but at the same time, it's like, it's just like the whole Shadow Step thing. It's like, some classes don't have an ability other than dodge to get close to somebody like a certain build or setup. And
some warriors rely on dodge for some of the damage, because there's that trait which gives you damage at the end of a dodge, which if you pump it up, if you have a bunch of power, you can get up to like 1,500 damage from that, from just rolling.
Yep.
So maybe it will help. But I'm back from Guild Wars 1 days, where a Mesmer used to be able to just completely fucking shut you down and have it to the point where all your skills are in like 45 second recharges or like just like permanently. I like it when you can be, when people have the ability, if they really spec in a specific direction, to really give you some problems, because that opens up some crazy gameplay situations and turnarounds and stuff like that. So I don't mind it if they do put that limitation on dodge as well, because you are moving. It does fall under the overall idea of that trait. Unlike teleportation, where your character isn't actually moving, you're just being teleported, you are moving when you dodge, so it could be interesting.
Well, I mean, can you do you do your full dodge distance when you're chilled or slowed?
That's a good question.
That'll be the biggest.
I mean,
like,
Shortbow does. If I'm chilled and I shortbow, I will clear the area
but
where
like,
I target.
Just like normal dodges, can you do you dodge
at
full distance?
I couldn't say, to be honest.
I think
it's
you do.
It's been so long since we will have to test this.
I think you do, because I remember like when you're. I remember some instances in PvE where there's like a slowing effect on you. And I think you can still dodge.
Well, you can still dodge, but do you dodge your normal distance?
Yeah,
I know,
yeah,
like when you're chilled,
there's
and
like,
as
at
a
the start
warrior,
of PvE,
when I do...
there's that rabbits in the Norn area. There's that rabbits thing where you're holding these items.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, but if you dodge twice, you cover the same normal distance instead of moving slowly, and you get out of the way of the rabbits. Like, so I think you do dodge your normal distance when you're under a slowdown effect.
I mean, in the way we think of dodge is usually made for... NPC attacks or person attacks, you dodge and it's evaded.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, you dodge a distance out from the area where their attack is, you don't get hit by it. That's how most people think of it, is that, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, we'll see, I guess.
We'll see, ANet will probably fucking have thought about this for longer than we have, so they'll probably have an idea of what they're doing. But the other thing they're doing is they're spreading more stun breakers through the utility skills, which is good. I think that's a very good thing, because stuns are fun.
See, and I'm horrible at stun breakers. Like, when I get stunned, I'm the kind of good person that sits there and goes, okay, when does this end? Okay, now I can move. You know, as opposed to, what trait do I have that can break this? I'm very horrible.
Well, for me, I just have the shake it off button. Shake it off!
Okay, wait.
I will yell my way through this done.
Fuck yeah. Instant. It's instant. It can be done in any circumstance. It's like one of the best skills in the game, and it's done breaks. So shake it off is, yeah, totally there. So.
And anybody else around you that's an ally that's stunned, they get...
They just get condition removal. I think only the stun break applies to you, but they get conditions
removal. Oh, yeah, just condition removal.
Yeah. Right. But in some cases, that condition can be days. So, yes, it can be very useful. Anyway, is that it? Is that it for the Guild Wars 2 stuff this week?
Pretty much. I mean, like, it's... you guys talk about weakness being changed?
Is it being changed? What are they doing to it?
I'm still reading.
I didn't see that
basically
part,
how it did work was had a decreased the endurance regeneration and also had causes non-critical hits to have a chance to become glancing blows which do less damage but now weakness will cause all hits both critical and non-critical to have a chance to become glancing blows which I mean like that's pretty good when you're up against like a crit build thief or something, and you're a necro. Really, they're just giving a lot of love to necro, which
is just more love to necros, which they need.
It's kind of neat.
Their wells have more purpose. They can actually get out of a decent fight. You know, it's great.
Now they just need some love for engineers, and I think everyone will be happy. Except thieves will be complaining by then, but oh well.
So I'm going
to
watch this.
I don't know. Right. I'd like to see how they could buff an engineer to overtake a thief. Because I still think to this day right now in the current fact, I could.
Their turrets have wheels and move around.
It doesn't matter. I could dodge out of that and then five shortbow out of it and then still attack the person. So
that shortbow skill is also one of the best skills in the game. I
want to see what they could do to engineers that could make them on par with thieves. So I think that'd be a great matchup, Engie and Thief. Hmm. To see, you know, the ingenuity and the
pure mobility. Pure mobility.
Yeah, the mobility of a thief. Yeah. That'd be a great head-to-head combat.
Yeah. How about that? Is it my turn?
I believe that will do it for the first half of this podcast, which is the Linking Cast. Coming up next after the break in fancy jazz suite musics, we'll talk about what we've been playing as well as probably Xbox.
The Xbox and, news. The only piece of news that's valid talking about this week, I guess. So and we're back. This is Sulfur Cynic, still joined by Doubleton and Squiddle.
Yar.
So this is going to be the Scotch House half of the episode. We are going to talk about what we've been playing. I'm going to be talking about The Last of Us, but with no spoilers, so I'll let the out up front. Squiddle's going to be talking about Remember Me, which I can't wait to listen to. But first, Doubleton, what you been playing?
Oh, crap.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know what I've been playing.
Have you been playing anything? I know you've been playing work. What did you do in work this week? We had to start recording way later.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Are targets in Australia?
Yes, we have a target here. Yeah.
Okay. You have a target.
No, I mean like we have a target brand here. I'm not sure if it's the same target brand, but we have a target.
Well, basically there's now this thing called city targets where they like I will either clear out a whole city block or just like buy out like a big part of a building and just make a target inside that block. They're a lot smaller than most targets and everything. But long story short, I had to go to a new target store and help them put like all the shelves on for the first time and all the fixtures.
Oh man.
And all like the signs and everything. And I've just been doing that for the past 2 days. I'll do it tomorrow.
Wait, what is that? So they just have you doing menial work? Isn't that for like builders? Do you guys have like people to do that?
No, they actually put the pillars there and like the flooring and the checkout area, like all that and the escalator works and everything. That's what the builders do. And then like they've made the base of the aisle, like the fancy back wall and like in the bottom.
Okay.
Yeah. But actually putting the shelves at the correct height and putting the like
the label strips on there and the labels and all that, like, and putting dividers down. All that dumb crap is this stuff I do every day at work.
Fuck, that sounds so bad. Well, I get,
I don't mind it. I mean, like, it's it's a boring enough job where I can just drone out and listen to podcasts.
Yeah, when I used to work in retail, I used to work at IKEA. We did that stuff, but on a much smaller scale. We had a team of people who were dedicated to doing that kind of stuff. But sometimes we helped as the sales stuff. And that, I actually prefer that to serving customers, so I'll say that.
I mean, like, it's and the work was different enough than, like, let's say just unloading a truck and putting, like, open box, put product on box on shelf.
Yeah.
Repeat.
Exactly.
Whereas I'm, like, I'm having to measure stuff. I'm having to, like, get different types of fixtures. I'm having to go. It's a really boring job, and anybody can do it, I admit, but it's also a job that until recently was, like, completely overnight, leaving me to do stuff during the day, like, you know, try and go to college.
Right.
They've and been now, like
it's a break. You're doing something different because this is not what you do every day normally. So,
yeah. Sorry. Every week is something new for a Target team member.
Wait, so do you work at Target specifically, or is, like, just a – is that like a group of chains?
No, Target specifically.
Okay, cool.
Always looking for something better, but whatever.
Whatever. That's
right. Applications, please, he will be accepting applications to any job.
I talked about any job, ladies. But I talked a little bit about Hawken. I won't talk too much again about it. It's still a fun game, but something cool about it that I'm not sure. Like,
I cannot believe you're still playing Hawken. That's pretty crazy.
I'm still playing. Like, I will occasionally jump into it. I want to jump into Natural Selection as well, because it's been a while since I played that game. There's just something really cool about this map in that they seem to capture that sense when you're in, like, watching an anime and there's a dust storm happening.
Oh, yeah.
More so than any other game has captured you being in a dust storm. Not like a real dust storm that basically it's just pitch black and you can't see anything, but there is the right amount of what looks like sand moving across the screen in an effect that makes it feel like I stayed to certain sides of the building to stay out of, like, the wind.
Right.
Subconsciously.
Okay. Nice.
And it was cool. Like, it helped increase my immersion with a simple weather effect that I haven't seen in many games. Like, yes, MMOs like Guild Wars have rain, but they don't have varying levels of rain, whether it be a light sprinkle, the normal rain that we see, or a thunderstorm.
Right.
Like, that stuff like that kind of bums me out. And I would like to, it makes me happy when I see that in games.
I am really bummed right now because I want to draw a direct comparison between that and The Last of Us, but I can't say anything because anything I say will be a spoiler.
And if you do, that will be the last of you.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. There you go. He's been waiting for that all day.
Actually, no, I can't talk about. I played, like, for an hour or so, PlanetSide 2.
Okay.
And
I did that last night a little bit.
My thoughts are, like, I haven't done any of the land vehicles. Flying vehicles are insane to try and wrap my head around what the developers were thinking when they designed the keybinds for it. Because it's just backwards crazy. It's just like...
Would you just say stupid fun? I mean, would that be a great way to sum up the entire aspect of playing that game is stupid fun? In a way? I mean, because...
Running on land, like, on land is stupid fun.
Yeah.
Like, fighting just as an infantryman, they did a bang-up job, A+, on just running around shooting guys. That I will attest to. Flying a vehicle, not for me. Nice. Not for people with only two hands and a human brain.
Wait, so is it worth, like, because you like flying in Armor 3?
Yeah, well, it's that whole thing of you're not flying a plane and you're not flying a helicopter. You're flying a spaceship that is a mix between the two of them.
What's wrong with that? That sounds cool.
Well, okay.
A lot of hovering, trying to control that.
I think, like, space is to go up, control is to go down, W is go forward, S is go back, A and D are strafe left and strafe right, and then the numbers are your pitch, like, your pitch right, pitch forward, pitch up and down.
Oh, I need a controller.
Does it support GamePad?
I think it does because it's on PS3, isn't it?
It is. Well, PS4. I think it's coming to PS4.
PS4.
Yeah.
So I guess it's cool that hey, MMOs are coming to consoles. That's really
Yeah. But
which
like,
means
like in MMOs, the context of PC, like can you just like have a 360 pad waiting there for when you're flying?
I think so. I will have to give another shot and come back to you guys. I'm sure Loopy will love the company. but like, yeah, I was just like trying to wrap my head around it after flying helicopters so much on something that is loosely based off physics and just like how a helicopter works in real physics, trying to like, okay, I don't know how this vehicle, like trying to make sense of a fantasy spaceship.
Like, is it just because the acceleration's all weird or like what's weird about it?
It just felt like the vehicles were
not like Arma 3.
Well, not like Arma 3, but it just seemed like they were too big or like too speedy for the size of the map, which is almost always the case.
Yeah. So the acceleration is weird. I can definitely see like if something moves in a way that you're not expecting it to, it can feel weird. Especially,
and there are people that have mastered this and are amazing, according to Loopy, flying around in these things, doing ace, like, you know, just headshots while in a plane, while 700 feet off the ground, sort of thing.
Yeah.
Pull up at the last second, and acrobatics and insanity ensues. But yeah, it's a free game. Give it a shot. Run around, shoot people on the ground, maybe in a vehicle.
How big is it, by the way? Like, how big is the download for that?
I think I downloaded last night. It was 9 gigs off of
that's not too bad.
Steam,
if I'm not recording. Oh, that's doable. Does it look good? I see Planet Side 2, I'm like, I should play that, and then I never go play it.
That is why Loopy enjoys it. I like so all the new players. They always say like it looks very busy. Like the artistic design is that there's just like it's like with science fiction is taking a bunch of just old cobbled together weird parts and putting together so it looks like science fiction-y.
Okay.
And they did like a pretty good job of just adding a little weird detail. And to me, it's like, why do we need this detail?
Yeah. If you compare that to like Warframe, which I haven't played either, but the art style, like his Warframe kind of went down the Japanese vision of the future, which is all like stark plain lines.
You're a robo samurai.
Yeah, you're a robo samurai and you look like fucking Deep Throat from MGS2 and MGS1. What am I saying? And you just like everything looks like smooth and svelte. And that's a vision of the future I can't stand either. Like it looks cool. I'll not say anything it's that. But I just don't identify with that being an even remotely possible vision for human future. And then I look at like PlanetSide or Warhammer and I don't connect with that either. In fact, pretty much the only future I've seen that I can connect with is Mass Effect. And even then, that's a little bit too clean. Like when they did the Omega stuff for Mass Effect 3, not the Omega, the Citadel stuff for the latest patch of Mass Effect 3, that's the first time when I've been like, okay, this is a future I can see us actually being in. But yeah, it's interesting here. I love seeing different visions for the future, whether I disagree with them or not. I'm Googling Warframe now. I mean,
I guess in other news, I played a little bit of Company Heroes, the original. I plan on getting 2, but I might be a horrible person and just wait till it goes on sale. Even though I want to show that, like, hey, Sega, I think you're doing the right thing of, like, picking up this franchise and paying for it. And weird that Sega is now the RTS, like, powerhouse.
Yeah, that is
Sega?
Weird.
Sega?
If Noob was here, he'd have something to say about that. But yeah, that is weird.
Yeah. And then also play a little bit of XCOM Enemy Unknown. Just, like, dusted off the single-player mission that I was on. Try twice, failed horribly both times. Like, all right, that's enough for today. Put that back on the shelf, and I'll try it again later.
Nice, interesting.
It's a weird, cool game. It made me excited for Massive Chalice, which I still plan on donating. They made it over $1 million on that thing. I am so happy for Brad Mir.
Dude, I was so wanting to put money toward Massive Chalice, but
you still can.
I don't know if I'll have the funds next week.
Yeah,
because it's closing soon, right? Isn't it like How much time?
As of the time of this recording, it's got 5 days to go. So probably when you post it, it'll have like 1 or 2 days.
No way I'll have cash for that. I'm so sad because I really want to put money towards it, but whatever.
You'll still probably be able to, like, even for Double Fine Adventure, it's just you won't get any of the fancy rewards other than just a copy of the game.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
That's probably fine. Like, I can live with just having a copy of the game, to be honest. So, and I think they're releasing the making of to more publicly, right, this time around? Or is it still...
Yeah, well, it's background? Since they made over $1 million, the big thing was that they will have a bi-weekly team stream, which I'm hoping is something like I hope they build it sort of like the Giant Bomb Show, and that it's just like them sitting on a couch talking about the game and what they've been working on for like, hey, well, so what'd you do this past 2 weeks? Well, I worked on coding this, and like we're still working on trying to figure out this design.
Considering how close those guys are to Giant Bomb, I can definitely see that being like what it is, which I hope is the case. Like, if you watch like some of the Double Fine Happy Action, not the Happy Action Theater, the adventure stuff, they've had just streams where a designer just lets you watch him draw art for it. So they just stream his screen as he draws art for it, and that's it. And that's pretty cool. Like, I like seeing that kind of stuff.
That's a really cool thing where you're just sitting back like reading a book or something.
Yeah.
Eating food.
Yeah. Cool. All right. And then, anything else?
I made Durin's day. Unfortunately, he couldn't be on it, though. Durin will be returning... In a couple weeks,
I think. Yeah,
His job's finally got stable, but there's just a video of when Brad Meir made it to a million, where he had just like fake as can be gold chains and like a top hat that was too small for him.
Yeah,
and for like a 5 minute video of just him like talking about the game and why, like, he's basically why they're not doing stretch goals or anything, but just it was really cool. That's but cool. The thing was, he committed to just keeping the hat on the whole time. That just like dumb as can be.
I'll put that in the show notes.
I just want to say, it's interesting. I'm looking at the Kickstarter for Massive Chalice right now, and I've seen this happen in a lot of games where, you know, you have a $20 buy-in to get you the game normally for whatever it is, maybe a little bit more for set tier after, and it's always like the not extreme top tier, but the one that's like special edition box copy that is more than what you would normally pay for a retail. It's almost like the box copy of a game is becoming like the collector's piece for everything. And I think it's very interesting. Like back in the day, you could go get Half-Life and you got a box and it's like, hey, cool, here's a box and throw it away. And now it's like, this is a collector's piece to put on your shelf to acquire and say, this is like my badge of honor.
Yeah,
that I was able to do that. It's pretty nifty how that's.
I just love that you said Half-Life. I'm assuming you're referring to Half-Life 2.
No, Half-Life 1.
Okay, well, Half-Life 1. Just Half-Life 2 was the first game that was required to be on Steam.
Yeah.
I'm an old gamer, I guess. if Half-Life 1 is referenced in having a box copy, so man. You know that for me that was kind of like my pivotal point. I remember buying it in a box, and it was pretty awesome. So I remember the days of having boxes on the shelves, and it's just kind of like
I still have boxes on the shelves. Those are pride.
There you go.
So yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to.
Cool. Anything else going on in your life? Like, what you doing at home? Is this just work? Just more work?
More work, but just hoping to probably won't be on the mumbles as much, other than on the set event nights, which hoping Thursday Night Throwdown becomes a thing again.
Yay.
I don't know. I'm almost done with that poll.
Any movies you've been watching? I just want to get all this stuff out of the way.
No, really. I'm just waiting for the Guillermo del Toro movie.
Fuck, Pacific Rim, man. But isn't Superman out there? Because Superman is one of the first movies in quite a while that's coming out like a week later in Australia. And I really want to get
Superman has come out this past weekend of the time of this recording.
Because Rory didn't like it, but the reviews have been pretty good.
It looks like a really well-done movie. I just don't really feel like watching a Superman movie.
Oh, I'm so sold.
I could guess the plot without having read it. Like, just see it's like, oh, this will be how the story is.
So something that somebody – I was listening to another podcast this week, and they stated that if you went into the movie not knowing the lore of Superman – which I'm not a fan of the lore. I'm not a fan. I don't know the lore. I don't know the backstory. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the intricate details of every comic that was ever released. That if you went into it not knowing that, and they would deliver just the right amount of knowledge that you need to know to understand the story and to kind of get an understanding of where he's coming from as how the story progresses throughout the history from the beginning to the end. So it's a great starting point.
Okay.
And without having to know every little detail about the lore.
The idea is like this is essentially a total reboot. Like it doesn't have to be rely on anything in the past.
Right. And I'm happy for that because I would rather see it knowing that than saying, I should have read, comic book number 39 to have known that this had happened, and I kind of like that because I was never a big comic book person, even though I love comic books and I love the idea of comic books. So
I'm just a huge comic book fan, but I'm a Marvel fan specifically. But I really like the Batman movies, and I actually am one of the few people apparently who really loved the last Superman movie. So I'm totally sold on this. It sounds really cool. And the fact that it's not like your average everyday Superman, it's like a new spin on Superman, that sounds pretty fun. So I'm going to go second because Squiddle has the most interesting thing to talk about this week. So
put me on a pedestal, why don't you?
What?
Wait, just making sure, Cynic, but the last Superman movie was with Kevin Spacey, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Billions!
I just like him as an actor.
So good.
He did it for Kevin Spacey. I mean, I've never seen a role where Kevin Spacey could not do a good job, and at least he nailed that part for me.
It was such a good line. I fell in love with him all over again. Like he's one of my favorite actors. Like him in Seven was spectacular.
Oh yeah.
And he hammed it up obviously for Superman, but I thought he did a really great job playing a hammy version of Kevin Spacey. Anyway, so for me, have I watched any movies? I'm just trying to think. No, aside from I think the last movie I watched was Iron Man. I don't think I've watched anything since. It's been E3 has been like pretty much the only thing on my calendar aside from The Last of Us for the last couple of weeks. I had the absolute biggest intentions of playing some of Dust and Legion Tale before this podcast, but I never got around to it because I don't know. You can't go from one emotional game straight to another emotional game. I don't think you can. Like I booted the game and there's like this cool like stormy start screen to that game. Yeah. And with nice music running in the background, I was like, I'm not in the mood for this. So what I did instead...
I could listen to that music for hours. I could just sit there. It's pretty nice. Just like fall asleep to that.
It's pretty cool. Cynic, I mean, do we want to talk about your experience with KRZ? Or KRZ?
Oh, sure.
I mean, you did go from one emotional experience to another after just beating The Last of Us. I made you play Kentucky Route Zero.
But it's kind of different, right? Because, like...
I didn't know you played that.
I telepresenced it. So I played The Last of Us, and then I really needed a palate cleanser. So then instead of Dust and Legion Tale, I actually ended up playing some of Phoenix Wright. Fuck yeah. What was Ace Attorney 4 Apollo Justice that I played a bit more of, which I've been like, I'm slowly refinishing that game since I played the first three back to back to back, and 5 is coming out soon, which I'll be buying a Nintendo DS, a 3DS for. But I played that, and then I jumped on to Mumble the next day and Thurbleton. What was it like for you? You were like, oh, I'm going to go on play Kentucky Route Zero Episode 1, and you're going to play it, Cynic. And I was just like, what? What are you talking about? We ended up just like streaming it on not Justin TV. I guess it is Justin TV, but Twitch TV on Thurbleton's channel. And he was playing the game and I was watching it and then telling him what to do. How was that? Like, what was that like for you?
I mean, it was really fun to watch another person's experience with it and what they enjoyed, what they chose to do. Like, I never would have thought to immediately go to the left and right of an area as soon as I get in there. That was cool. And then like, some of the places you just like went to go off the beaten track, I hadn't gone to because I was going to wait until the game was finished in case it would lead me there. And by the way, like I only did this because episode two was out, or act two was out, and I only let him play, like, we only played act one.
Yeah. Yeah. But I was kind of a bit like, I jumped in, or I inverted commas, I telepresence in, and he boots the game. And a lot of this I had seen from the quick look. So I didn't want to just, like, see the same stuff they did in the quick look. So I ended up just, like, after the first scenes, I was like, okay, fuck this. We're just going to drive around the map. So we ended up driving around a good deal. Like, not all of it, but we hit a good deal off the Kentucky Red Zero map. Just, like, walking to, like, old museums.
Well, a good deal of the Kentucky map.
Is that all of Kentucky? Is that all of Kentucky?
No, but, like, the map you played on was Kentucky.
Okay, so there is...
There are other maps.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so we went drove around in Kentucky and, like, just did weird stuff. Aside from, like, one incident with electricity, it was pretty fun.
Which, I'm sorry I wasn't that quick to react. I was sorry.
It was like, it was one of the things you saw in the quick look, but it was a, like, a bait shop or something, and there was three, like, pools there, and they had stuff in them, and it was like, reach into the pool and feel around. And so after the first one, I was like, fuck it, just reach into all of them, it's cool. I want to see all the dialogue. So he reaches into the first one, stuff happens. He reaches into the second one, stuff happens. Then he reaches into the third one, and the first stuff it says is like, I feel tingling up and down my arms. And I knew immediately that was electricity. So I was like, oh shit, Thurbleton, pull your fucking hand out. That's electricity. And then I just see him click, like, reach further.
And the thing is that there has always been this delay with the way the stream is. Because, like, I'm streaming the game, goes out to Justin TV, and then goes all the way across the world to Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, something like that.
Cynic sees it, gives me his response, and then that travels all the way back via Skype into my ear. So another 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not that. It was definitely under 30.
Well, clearly under not, minute, since we're doing a podcast right now. But yeah, it was like a decent sized delay, especially with the
age we live in is insane.
Yes, but yeah, it was funny watching that happen and the character passes out and whatever. But it was really cool. I really enjoyed. I have to dial that back.
Awesome. Just like he blacks out and has that whole like the music changes and it goes to him thinking about Lisette, which and it never says, but like, is that his wife? His old girlfriend? I don't know what that is, but
yeah.
I enjoyed that as just like a fly on the wall of like of your story or your experience of just like, oh, I'm learning more about the protagonist.
Yeah, I had the feeling that not many people like went down the same talking paths as I did.
Yeah.
Because I went, because as soon, like every time I saw something that was like more to do with like his past, I went down that route. And a lot of other people would have gone for what's funny or what was just like off the wall and weird and random. But I tend to connect more with characters in games. So every time he was talking to like Blue and would bring up like these random names I'd never heard of, I'd go down that path instead. And it ended up, I think for both of us, revealing some stuff about the plot that neither of us knew going into it, which is kind of cool.
I just want to say good old Blue is always by your side.
Blue is, by the way, the only valid name for that dog.
In my playthrough, he's named Homer.
You suck. She is named Blue, and that's how it should be in canon.
Wait, but I just want to ask, is it kind of fitting? Have you played through the second part yet?
No.
I have. He has not.
Yeah. Okay. So can I ask, as a semi-spoiler, maybe, I don't know, yay or nay, is Homer a fitting name for the dog at all?
Oh. Ooh. In reference to the Odyssey. Okay, okay. Cool.
Yeah, right. I figured it's the Odyssey and not the Simpsons, but...
yes, that's what I was... yeah. That's what I was alluding to. Yeah.
I have yet to go through I've yet to go through hell.
That's probably one of the most intelligent questions that has been asked on the Lincoln Cast.
We're on the Scotchcast right now.
Oh, we are on the Scotchcast right now. Goes for both.
I think my biggest question for you is, when I first talked about Act 1 of Kentucky Route Zero,
sure.
The big pull away for me was just interacting with not quite the lore, but just like the sense of Appalachia, which is like that, like it's Kentucky is a part of just like
right
the whole like the stories, the like the vibe of the whole area. Did you get a feel for that?
And that was why it was weird for me. Like, that's why I don't think I connected with the game on the same level you did. Like, by the end of that, I was pretty happy and saying, and I think I said this over Mumble at the time, I don't think Kentucky Route Zero is for me. When I see the weird stuff in that game, for me, all I see is weird stuff, inverted commas. Like, it's just okay, stuff that's weird is happening. But for someone who's familiar with that, with the feeling of like some of the more mysticism around Kentucky, I guess it would have a far deeper meaning or like more like resonance with you. But for me, it was just like, okay, weird stuff happens. And so it's just like, it wasn't a case where I was, but remember, like, going into this, I just come off fucking The Last of Us. So
yeah,
I said this straight up front before we even started the stream. I was like, at the moment, my standards for games are just all the way fucking skewed, like off the charts skewed.
If you're not good enough to be Naughty Dog's level of production.
Yeah. I said that going, I was like, I forgot what my actual words were. It was like, it's going to take a lot to make me impressed today. It was something pretty much what I said going in. And to be fair, that is unfair to be treated like any game like shouldn't be treated like that. But I didn't have that resonance with Kentucky Route Zero as someone who perhaps has some familiarity with Kentucky would have, I'd say. Very cool. Any other like statements about Kentucky Route Zero? I thought it was cool though. I liked like some of the freaky stuff in the mines, for example. That was kind of interesting.
I mean, for the next few days, it'll be on the VOD. I don't want to save it permanently because, I mean, like, until the developers make that, like, the free one, and or if they make it free and the other one's, like, available, it still doesn't feel right to let that anyone just get. Plus, you want to make your own journey on that game. There are so many. You did enjoy, like, the choices that were presented to you, right, Cynic?
Yeah. Yeah. It was really interesting crafting my own version of a preset story. I've never done that before, which is pretty interesting.
It was like it's a story where like the choices don't affect, but they sort of do affect. Like that name of the dog is always there, whatever his or her name is.
Right.
I think that would be interesting. I mean, I've watched you play. I've watched the quick look of Kentucky Route Zero.
Yeah.
I think I've watched you play a couple times, or at least maybe that was the quick look. But regardless, if they were to release the episode one as it may be, as a free kind of intro to kind of get you hooked into the game, it would definitely do the job. I would just say that right now because I think the game is phenomenal, but I want to wait until it's completely released because I am one that hates to watch TV shows on HBO or whatever it is, and I got to wait the next week to see the catch up to that episode. Absolutely hate that. I like the Netflix division where it's the entire episode, here's the season, go for it.
Yeah.
So I'm one that's going to wait until it comes out in its full glory, and I will definitely want to play that. But if they were to release it like a episode one, play it for free, they could probably really hook people that enjoy the kind of suspense. And I think it's awesome.
There's obviously no combat in that game whatsoever. It's about exploration and just like delving into a world. And if that world hooks you, it didn't me, but it may do you. It could definitely be like something that you will really enjoy because there's other elements of it, like the music or should I say just like ambient sound, because it's not really like an overarching theme or musical melody to it. It's more of just like an environmental effect brought about by instruments. It's more of a just like the world around you has like just hums to some extent in that game. So So the music, the atmosphere and the visuals are fantastic. There's a lot of like for an indie game, which I haven't said in a long time, but The Last of Us has reminded me that sometimes it's valid to say for an indie game, it has got really great production values and it's very much, I recommend it at least for people to try it out. It may not hook you. It didn't hook me, but it's definitely pretty cool.
Well, and as the person that really likes to speak out on audio in games, because if you haven't heard me in a couple of the other casts, that's my big thing is audio in games. Any indie game that can really hit the cues of the audio suspense and what they're trying to go for via audio can say, you know, graphics are second best to what the audio can do if the platform that we're doing it on cannot produce the graphics that we want.
Yeah.
If you can make the audio work, then the graphics will be the person playing it can imagine the graphics in their mind more than what can be displayed on the screen.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily have agreed with you as much as I do now, because after playing To the Moon, I can say that any game, if the audio is done right, any game can work. And
sure,
To the Moon is definitely an example of a game that lives and dies by its amazing soundtrack, like just spectacular sound. I can't wait for you to finally get your hands on that game, Squiddle. But
I know.
Yeah, but like straight up, I agree. Sometimes sound can sell a game. And in this case, I'd say the visuals are more impressive than the sound, specifically in the case of Kentucky Route Zero. But it's definitely, the sound is strong. It's definitely got a sense of style to it that's cohesive and pretty cool. So,
I mean, like the horror genre, which is predominantly a lot of indie games, because like the low budget and all that, it's really, really good ones usually have good sound quality associated with them, because that is one of the best tools for creating an emotional sense.
Yeah,
sure.
When they can't jump out and actually scare the person.
Yeah.
And I just recently purchased, I believe it was Home for the iOS.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually looking it up right now just to reference what we're talking about here. Home. I have not played it yet, but everyone is saying in the reviews that I saw that it has really good audio cues for scaring, for that suspense feeling.
Right.
And I'm really interested in playing that. So that's what drives me. And, you know, like I said, independent games can do it. It can be a great thing.
Yeah.
What was the game Brad talked about? The whole Norse mythology one?
Oh, no.
Because, that one had really good, it puzzles that were sound-based.
Yearwalk.
Yeah, Yearwalk. You had, choices to go sometimes. And the one that made a certain sound or made them made more sound than the others was the one you had to choose.
Yeah,
I purchased that game. I haven't played much of it. I played.
You spent currency on that game.
I spent currency. Betcha.
Nice. Yeah, that's cool.
So Cynic, what else have you been playing?
And the last thing, and perhaps the most important thing I've been playing, and I'm actually going to use that word specifically. The most important thing I've been playing is The Last of Us. No spoilers. I'm not going to say a single spoiler here. I don't want to talk about it for too long, because it'll probably come up again when Shin Boy gets back on this podcast. But I had an existential crisis this week because, well, not really, but I realized that every other game I finished this year, I've been saying that's my favorite game of the year. And I've said that about Bioshock Infinite, To the Moon, and now The Last of Us. And I was just
I might need to go back and check, download the episode where we talked about Bioshock, or at least the three around it where you talked about Bioshock.
Yep.
But I think that was the one time you said, pending The Last of Us,
yes.
This is my game of the year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is nice to see that's come out. But Cynic, we got six more months before this year's over.
I don't care.
Watch Dogs. For me, Watch Dogs is the only thing that could rival Bioshock, in my opinion.
Durin pointed out to me that Watch Dogs is coming out.
There.
Go ahead, sorry.
Forza. No. That's coming out this year.
Fuck off. whatever. For me, the only things I can see that could rival this would have been Infamous Second Son, but that's not coming out this year. Coming out next year. And Watch Dogs. But having seen the fucking hour of gameplay they've put out already for that game, I'm pretty confident in saying that The Last of Us is possibly the game of the generation, not just the game of the year.
It's what little I've seen about it. The one thing I really love, and I'm sure you can talk in depth about it, is the whole fragile.
Yeah.
I guess is a good way to put out everyone is both you and your the people you're fighting. There, it's not a bunch of bullet sponges.
I don't want to go into it because I would say that some elements of the game do break that. The Last of Us isn't a perfect game, right? It's definitely
the zombies are allowed to not be bullet sponges.
I cannot say why I think that.
Can I at least ask the question?
Mm-hmm.
The quick look that probably many people saw on giantbomb.com,
yeah,
games, website about video games. Does that do it justice to make me want to play the game? Or does that not show the in-depth feeling and emotion that it draws upon an individual while playing?
The only reason
I ask is because when I watched it, I thought it's another zombie game. And I didn't get that feeling. Like, for me, I do not own a PS3 anymore.
Right.
It did not make me want to go out and buy a PS3 just to play this game.
You should.
So is there something that I'm missing that was not shown in the quick look that really could make me feel that way if I played it? And that's kind of the question I'm asking.
Everything that you're all missing is not in that quick look. Because the quick look...
Okay.
The problem was with the quick look, even though it's a pretty good quick look, he specifically didn't show any of the plot. Like, he said that at the top, right? He specifically didn't show any of the plot. And the reason he did that was because every element of the plot in that game is important to that game.
Okay.
And
okay.
So you actually haven't seen anything. If people are out there are on the fence about buying a PS3 just for this game, I would say don't do it just for this game. Do it for the fucking huge library of other awesome games as well. But I would like for this. I'm the type of person who bought a PS Vita for Persona 4 Golden, and
So you're a little bit on the crazy side when it comes to really good games.
Exactly. Yeah. And in that vein, I would say yes, buy a PS3 for The Last of Us. So for people as crazy as me, yeah, do it. But I don't want to go too deep into the game. I just want to look at this from like just a top-down kind of level. I think that... So I sat down... And I had to think through, like, when I had this existential crisis, this pseudo existential crisis that doesn't really matter because games aren't really a thing. Well, that's okay, whatever. So, The Last of Us is a game I didn't enjoy.
What?
It's a game that I didn't have fun playing. It's a game that I would never, like, wish I didn't play it, and I would never say that like I didn't have like it wasn't compelling. The kind of argument I'm trying to make here is have you guys seen Requiem for a Dream, that movie?
Long time ago, yes.
So the Requiem for a Dream is a movie by the same guy who made The Fountain and a couple of other fantastic films. I keep forgetting his name, but that is actually my favorite movie of all time. And that movie is a movie that deals with... It's got nothing to do with The Last of Us, so don't worry about spoilers. But that movie deals with drug addiction. And so essentially what that movie does is it... and I'm not going to say this is the same as The Last of Us or not. It gives you... It's a series of characters and makes you feel for them. And then as the movie goes on, it destroys those characters on a fundamental human level to the point at the end of Requiem for the Dream, for a Dream... they are these husks of who they were, and that journey of that destruction was so poignant and so powerful that it is my favorite movie of all time. But I would never watch it again, and I had no fun watching that movie. The Last of Us is that's how it works. Like, I had no fun in it. It's the argument I posed on Giant Bomb is that it makes an argument for games as a medium that perhaps games don't have to be fun. Perhaps compelling is just as valid.
Because, so it's an experience.
Yeah, it's a compelling experience. At no point did I want to never play that game again. I kept wanting to go back to it. I kept playing it, even though I wasn't having fun, because I wanted to see how everything comes together. And it fits together so well. Like, the... If you look at like the individual levels of the gameplay, the actual mechanics, the base mechanics of it, the impact of the melee, the swimminess, the intentional swimminess of the gunplay, the lack of resources, the scavenging, but in a way that isn't as stupid as Bioshock Infinite. You don't open a drawer and find an ice cream. Like, the way everything hangs together is so well that the game actually plays really well. As a game, it's very good. But when playing it, for example, I'd be having like relative fun whilst playing it, and then I'd come up against something that just made me want to quit. Like, there's it creates such a level of of like foreboding around some instances that you're just like, I'm out. Like there's a time where you walk into this, like you got through all this shit, you go through all this crap, and then you walk up to this grate in the ground and you open it and you realize that you have to go through a tunnel, like a dark tunnel. And I was like, fuck it, I'm out. I put the controller down, walked away. I was like, nope, I'm not doing that. Do not want to touch this game. It's like a Slender Man level of fuck that, not doing it. Fuck you. Fuck the game. Don't want to touch that shit. Of stuff. So it's perhaps it's fun in the moment, but overall that game isn't fun at all. But it's compelling. And that's really important. But aside from the gameplay of it, just the plot itself, Bioshock Infinite, without spoiling it, have you guys both played that game? You guys have both played Bioshock, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Cool. Yep. Did you like...
One thing I do want to add is just the way you said that remind me of, like, whenever I would go out rock climbing just in the world, it's the joke was always, you hated it while you were there, mm-hmm. but the experiences and stories from that was just like was some of the best like stories that we would yeah. have when we went back.
Absolutely,
like when we like came back to the campsite or whatever.
Yeah,
and so, I mean it's very, and I just want to say draw the correlation to it's very similar. And maybe I'm wrong in this to war, and that my relatives have fought many wars and they have great stories from it. But right. it was hell while they were there. But they have really good stories to tell about their experiences where they were. And how everything played out.
So I'm you and say, Troy Baker and that girl have been through some real shit, man.
I'm going to say that some people have seen The Last of Us that way, but I'm actually going to disagree. Like personally, I don't actually see The Last of Us that way. I don't point to it and said, "Oh, that was awesome." Back when looking back to it, aside from some specific moments, when I look at The Last of Us, I see all the times I didn't enjoy the game but kept playing it anyway because. The struggle was part of it, and I look at that and I say that is the story, that is what the game's trying to say. When you are put in a situation that you just want to stop fighting for 5 minutes, fuck, I hate how all these people are trying to kill me, that's what the game's saying, that's what the game is doing, that's why it's being paced that way, that's why it's forcing you to combat, that's why you're hating it as you're going through it, is because that's the message of the game. And that's that overarching level of coherence is why I think The Last of Us really does actually move the whole medium forward. It actually does do something on a fundamental level that no other game has done before. But that aside, like just straight up, just talk about the story itself and forgetting all the gameplay stuff. So you guys have seen Bioshock Infinite. Would you guys agree that Bioshock Infinite was pretty awesome? Well, Doubleton might not agree with this, because I think we've had this discussion before. But Squiddle, Bioshock Infinite was pretty awesome, but the ending made it amazing, right? Like, that's how
I see. I mean, for me, I guess the way that you feel about Last of Us mm-hmm. is very similar to the way that I feel about Bioshock Infinite. I mean, right. I've not played Last of Us, mm-hmm. But I had a very, lack of a better terms, come to Jesus with Bioshock Infinite. It was kind of like a, oh, wow, this is a great story. I mean, I absolutely mm-hmm. love what they did with this game. The music for me, the storyline hit every note that I yep. would have wanted in the game. And I have not played a game like that since, and I hate to say it, like Half-Life 1. I did right. not walk away from a game and go, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Wow. Yep. What the fuck just happened? Mm-hmm. And I was shocked by that, that I could still experience that emotion from a game, like a movie. Like I just yeah. watched a movie that was directed by the greatest director ever, mm-hmm. and he really hit every emotion that he was trying to portray, and I felt it inside of me.
Yep.
So I guess from what you're experiencing with this game, it's mm-hmm. on the very same playing level.
Well, playing field is that. So I'm gonna agree with pretty much everything you said there. Just in terms of Bioshock Infinite, like for me, I thought that the way that it gives you hints all the way through that game for like who the characters are and what their backgrounds are and that kind of stuff, and how that comes to a point at the end with the final, like we can't spoil it, but the things sure. that happen towards the end of that game, it kind of sews everything together in an awesome way that is consistent even if you replay that game. Like if you experience some of the stuff, for example, with the twins over again, it gives you even more meaning. And it makes it all the way more awesome and how congruent all that plot is and how that works to construct Bioshock Infinite. And I'm going to say that, and I'm going to say that The Last of Us does it better. If you can even imagine
it. So, I mean, for me, there's a lot of game directors, mm-hmm. I would say, out there that can't finish a game. And I mean that on the basis of they can't seem to come to a end of a game that kind of brings everything together and go, here's the world. Yeah, so you had
Mass Effect 3.
Exactly. You had Mass Effect 1, you had Mass Effect 2, not that
I'm bashing the game. Mm-hmm. No. It's just how do you end the tale of the universe?
Exactly.
Sure.
And
they sort of
set themselves up for that.
Yeah, and for me, Bioshock Infinite did that. I mean, it was kind of like, okay, this is the end. Like, I don't feel there could be any story after this.
Yeah.
In my feeling, there could be completely in the director's mind, but from what I took away from it, I don't feel there could be. And for me, I feel what they were trying to portray.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that. I'm glad they did that because there's been very few games that have been able to do that.
Yeah. And I'm going to say that I again, entirely agree with you. And Naughty Dog does the same, but better. And I fully expect you to not believe me.
No. I believe you, but for me, I'm not going to pay the price to play that game at where I'm at right now. But I had stated before to you, PS4 comes out.
Yeah, if they release this for PS4, totally.
Don't release it for PS4, it's going to come out on Gaikai probably.
It's probably going to come out on Gaikai.
Yeah.
So in that vein, I actually created a poll yesterday with actually way more votes than I was expecting. In Giant Bomb, you usually don't get over like 50 votes for most polls. The larger voting community is probably around the lines of 700 people. Like, we're talking like pretty hardcore Giant Bomb forum goers. It doesn't sound like a lot of people, but I actually do trust the Giant Bomb community in a lot of ways because I feel the same as most. We're all here from the Giant Bomb community, so I feel the same way as most of them about a lot of things. 150 votes. And the specific poll I raised was for those who have actually finished both games, because the endings are really important to both of them. And they, in a lot of ways, the endings have many parallels between them, though I can't say any more than that. For people who finished both games, which game do you think is better? And 46% said The Last of Us, and only 19% said Bioshock Infinite. And other things were like, I can't decide, and I'd like to neither of them or see results. Like, so aside from that, just between those two, about 60 to 70% thought that The Last of Us is better. And I'm posing that not to say that I think The Last of Us definitively would be better, because I think everything's subjective, and obviously The Last of Us just came out, so some people were swayed by the immediacy of the response from The Last of Us. But I'm just putting it out there as an argument for, if you thought that Bioshock Infinite was amazing, which I agree with you, I think it was, even though Thurbleton, I don't believe, like, you didn't have as deep a connection with the plot as maybe some others did.
I mean, like, it's, I think one of the big benefits in Last of Us' favor, which I haven't, like, I don't know firsthand about this, and you would probably have mentioned if this were the case, but after playing Last of Us, you probably didn't have to study some charts.
Absolutely. Like, one of the coolest things about Bioshock Infinite...
You did?
No.
I'm
agreeing with you. One of the coolest things about Bioshock Infinite is it made quantum mechanics a thing in all of gaming for, like, a week. Like, everyone suddenly
knew
about quantum
mechanics.
It was
super confusing, but if you could work it out,
yeah,
it made perfect sense.
It was really cool as well.
It was so weird.
Like, I love how physics was, like... Like, gaming is a relatively... People who game are generally pretty clued up people. Like, we're pretty intelligent on a larger, like, scale. Aside from maybe, like, the COD dude bros, who
I'm reading a book on global populations and stuff about... Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Sure.
People tend to be a little bit more educated. Like, gamers tend to be a little bit more educated. And even then, seeing such a groundswell of interest in physics because of Bioshock Infinite was an awesome thing. Like, stuff like that contributed to why, up until I played The Last of Us, I thought that Bioshock Infinite was almost unapproachable this year because of like just the amount of stuff it brings in, the amount of nuance it applies, and like, external sources it applies in its own contiguous plot. It was really fantastically done. In the complete opposite side of things, like 30% of The Last of Us you've seen before, which is kind of crazy. Like, there's stuff about the world that is just like the same as fucking like a million other zombie fictions in the past. This is just like, there's so many times when I played that game when I was like, really? Like, I've seen this before, Naughty Dog. Come on. I know like Uncharted was essentially a new spin on Indiana Jones, but this in a lot of ways is just a new spin on existing zombie fiction. And it's totally weird.
It's almost, it's a new spin on The Walking Dead, right? Because it's like you like, well, as far as I know, it's never explained like how the outbreak happens with
it. Actually, does explain zombies. It, but aside from that, okay, it's anyway, just like, it's groups of zombies. It's
you're having to survive in a plant zombie apocalypse.
Yeah,
which is more or less the same as Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, or I Am Legend. It's very reminiscent of a lot of these these movies and books and so forth. Was it Swiddle?
You state movies. Mm-hmm. Right? It's interesting. I looked up because for me, I wanted to see the difference between the director of Bioshock Infinite, mm-hmm. the creative mind behind it, and the creative mind behind Last of Us.
Yeah.
When I did a search on director of Last of Us, mm-hmm. I get an IMDb database, which I've never seen before when I've searched for a game.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess it's never come up as like the first look, which is kind of mm-hmm. interesting for me. So they give it a 9.5, but it's kind of like, oh, so it's a movie. So it really is moving. I feel games are moving into that realm of the emotional triggers they pull as a movie, making them into games that I'm wanting more in games.
It's about time because they got the budgets of them sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's almost half the budget of a blockbuster movie for the year, mm-hmm. I would say. And they don't deliver a lot of them.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I hope as they move forward, they will. Because, yeah, right. They have the budget where they can do it.
But like, I'm left in a position because I really loved Bioshock Infinite. And I could not believe that I'd love Last of Us more. I'm in the position to say that I think that those games are like one-offs. Like, I don't know if games this year or even next year or even the year after that will approach those two games. Like, I think that those two games were products of a overlong console cycle. It was products of people being bored with the shit that gets dribbled on us for so long, for these last 8 years of just the same crap. Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Battlefield, 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 Uncharted, Uncharted.
And now it's Call of Duty but with robots. Yes.
Yeah. It's just like
Titanfall.
I don't think these games will be mirrored in the near future. Which is kind of scary in a lot of ways because I hope they do. But aside from that, we're getting off topic. But just rewind, just the last capper on The Last of Us. I will say that people are discussing in the forums in The Last of Us. Let's just put it this way: The Last of Us only has like of its 18-hour plus for me at least playtime, which is huge for a big budget game nowadays. Just for the single player experience, even though I think I'd beat Bioshock in like 12 to 14, something like that. And this took me 18 hours. From the 18 hour experience, only about maybe 45 minutes to an hour of that is actual cutscenes. Most of the storytelling it does in world, in engine, with you walking around, seeing stuff, talking to people, that kind of thing, in engine with complete player control. And even then, if you look at the spoiler threads, which I don't want you to do unless you finish that game, the things people are talking about in the spoiler threads are like the nuance in someone's voice when they say a specific thing and what that implies about their motivations for doing a specific act. Or like the look on their face when they said this and that informs what I think that meant. Or the pausing as someone does X and just like looks at Y, informing what they mean and what they think. And that's the kind of discussion you're seeing around just the storytelling in The Last of Us. And I don't think you even saw that for any other game, even including Bioshock Infinite. You didn't see stuff like that.
So what you're saying is hopefully this is not spoilerish. I pray it's not. So the end of, or the, the end of, or what happens at the end of BioShock basically mm-hmm. resonates throughout the entire story
yeah.
of Last of Us, as opposed yeah. to just this one part. It's the entire echo of what happens while you play.
Exactly right, correct. Exactly. I think that quality is right. maintained for the entire duration. And with that, okay. that's enough Last of Us
we
talk.
We have talked yes. about Last of Us.
I was not expecting to do that.
You promised!
I promised it would be short!
In one word, yep. what would you describe it?
One word?
Just one.
Does this count? G-O-T-Y?
Gotti? All right.
Yeah, there you go. No, I think it's the game of the generation at the moment. It moved from number 14 in my top games of all time to number 7, and then when I thought about it more, it's now number 2. It's just below Persona 4 Golden as one of my favorite games of all time. So,
yeah. as the co-host.
Yep. Moving on.
Squiddle Sanders.
Squiddle, the guy who actually had the interesting thing to talk about, because who the fuck wants to watch me fucking come over Last of Us?
What are your thoughts on New Neo Paris?
Remember Me. So you told us before the show that you finally finished Remember Me. Before we get to there, though, have you had any more experience with Dust and Legion Tale?
I played a little bit of it. I got maybe about 30 minutes further where I was. Not a lot. I wanted to focus on finishing Remember Me because it was mm-hmm. more of a relevant and time-based sure. It was released to kind of be able to talk about it.
Cool.
So I did that. Hopefully next time we do this, I will have finished that game.
How's Remember Me?
I mean, this is another game that I really want to get, but we'll probably be waiting until the Steam Summer Sale because I can't really afford it right now.
I would say wait till the Steam Summer Sale. I just want to say it is not as – I will not condemn it as much as people had said.
With the combat and then just general
yeah,
gameplay?
Yeah. Okay. I just want to state I played it on PC, used a 360 controller to play the game because it is not
– Heresy!
It is, yes, I know. Oh, gosh. It is not mouse and keyboard friendly from what I found. So I went to controller, which I was very fine with.
Right.
And the game itself is, I think, really well done. Story could have been developed more.
Right.
But other than that, the only real criticism I have of the game, which I spoke to Cynic about earlier today, or mm-hmm. at least mentioned, is in the year of 2013, we do not need QuickTime events in any form or fashion anymore. Get rid of them. They are not necessary.
Figure out a better way. Like Beyond
Two Souls.
Tale of Two Souls or something. Had originally been going with QTEs, and they've instead gone with basically like you're going in slow motion and you have to press the right button. So like it's a guided QTE.
I'm okay with, I think for me, it breaks the immersion when you say hit X right here and you have a time base when you can hit that button.
Oh, okay.
Instead of hitting X, it slows down and the button you've been using to punch this whole time, you have to use to punch.
I'm actually going to argue with this because The Last of Us makes a actual argument for QTEs.
You already used up your Last of Us time.
I don't know about you guys, but
that was the last comment.
I agree that press triangle at the exactly right time to save your ass, or otherwise the game will end, is a pretty shitty QTE. But stuff like you have to, I think mashing a button works way better, is what I'm going to say. Because
it's yes, issue of
I'm,
and like
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Okay
anybody who's tried making a like a D&D encounter or like anybody who's tried crafting a combat experience, you want to have the option for choices, mm-hmm. but the trouble is you have to have fail state for those choices.
Yeah.
And just dying is a really bad fail state.
Yeah. Especially if
so
it's
you
a
have
quick
to have
QTE.
Ways. Yeah, you have to have outs for it. So you have to have like QTE, like the idea of the QTE where it's like, oh, it's if you die, you can
yeah.
not die.
And the fine thing about mashing QTEs is that it doesn't really have that because you will eventually get there, but because you're continually putting input. Like, for example, in Metal Gear Solid 4, when you're going through the microwave chamber, you're mashing triangle that entire – I think it was triangle – the entire time. And that made you connect with Snake, because you're going through admittedly a far lower form of physical torment, but you're there trying to get him through that microwave chamber, and I think that works. So QTEs do still sometimes
right work. There's a place for it. Mm-hmm. And where in Remember Me, I feel it is the moments where it happens are short enough to where it really should not be a big deal. But I had an issue where my immersion was so set into the game where I have been playing for, you know, 2 to 4 hours right. at this point. And then all of a sudden I come upon a QTE event where it's kind of like, what? I have to look at, like, for me, I mean, I'm not mastered at the controller. I used to be back in my Nintendo days, my old school NES days, right. where I could just hit a button and know exactly what I was doing.
Okay, to be fair, the SNES days, there were like three buttons.
I'm talking about NES days where you had A and B and
two
that
buttons.
Was it.
Yeah, but they didn't have were they quick time events back then? Was that a thing?
No, there wasn't a thing like that. But you knew what buttons were what. You knew what was jump. And you knew what was whatever your fire button was.
Right.
So, I mean, the QTEs are short enough to where they're not really an issue. But for me, there needs to be a better way to implement it. And the game itself is great. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed playing. I think the main character has a lot of depth to her that can really that could have been brought out more.
What are your thoughts on them going with a female protagonist instead of the publishers who demanded a male protagonist?
I really feel that the role, after playing it, the role of a female protagonist was very beneficial and perfect for the role that it was. I thought that it was really well done. I may have thought different if it was a male protagonist. I may not have thought of it at all if it was a male protagonist, to be honest. But I really liked that it was a female protagonist. And when I was playing it, I don't know if I really thought about it much until the end. And I was like, this was really well done based on the story arc. And that's all I'm going to say to that is that based on the story arc, it played extremely well into it.
Wait, so just rewinding a bit, has it gotten to the point where having a female protagonist is a novelty? Like, is it like a selling point now? Because Portal does it.
I don't think so, but I think if the original director and writer of whatever story you're doing, mm-hmm. If they feel so, there's a point where I think the writer says this needs to be a female or this needs to be a male, and maybe producers say no, we need to have more of a presence based on what public opinion is. We need to have this person. Yeah. I think the writer themselves have an idea when it comes to it that needs to be done, and it should stay that way. It shouldn't come down to corporate saying, no, we feel that, you know, public opinion states that we need to have more males in games now. There's too many females. I mean,
but do you think that, for example, Mirror's Edge, I'm not going to talk about like if they changed it, but in Mirror's Edge, do you think that the fact that Faith was a compelling female character sold that game to a lot of people? Like, if it was a dude in Mirror's Edge 1 originally, do you think people would have been as interested in that game?
It's interesting you say that, because I think maybe if it was, but it's hard, you know, hindsight being 2020, I think that if it was a female, I would like to think, or if it was a male, that I would not have, would I have been drawn to it more? I don't know. I like the idea of the game. I like the action of the game.
The visual style is still there. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
I'm immediately thinking of Troy Baker as the voice actor for it.
If I had never known what the sex of the character was, I probably wouldn't even care about it.
Maybe.
Even when Mirror's Edge came out, I didn't think at that time, oh, it's a female protagonist, this is awesome. But with all the news that's happening nowadays,
I don't know what it is, but for me, it's always been a factor. It's a factor to consider when looking at a game.
For me, it's the nature of the story and the context within it. I mean, like, it's, I think with Mirror's Edge, for that case, mm-hmm. I think it was better that they went with a female protagonist. I hope we aren't spoiling too much by the fact that, like, oh, it's you get burned by a few people, and your way of solving it isn't picking up a gun and going all Rambo. It's running around doing crazy acrobatic stuff while occasionally picking up a gun, unless you want to go for that awesome achievement.
Right. Sure. But like, and then you have like cases like Final Fantasy XIII, where Lightning could have been any other protagonist in that she's just like, she barely says anything. She's very like minimalistic with her word choices. She fights with a sword like any other Final Fantasy main character, or she's just like, she's pretty much the same as Cloud in many ways for Final Fantasy, or Squall, for example. So in that case, I think it was an interesting statement that they just went, here is Lightning, she's our main protagonist, and we're not going to say anything about it. Like, there's just no question in their minds. There's no, like, I'm a female. There's no, like, dialogue which goes, hey, I'm a female, deal with it. It's just fucking, she's a girl, and you just play. And I think that's awesome. But yeah. In the other hand, with Mirror's Edge, I always felt that it was more underlined that she was a female for some reason. It was more, perhaps it was because you're playing with her in a first person's perspective. It just felt more like it was making more of a statement by having a female character. Do you feel like Remember Me dwells on the fact that she's female at all, or does it just kind of deal with it and move on?
I want to say that the story is designed based on it.
Right.
If they were to have done a flaw, if they were to have made a male protagonist as opposed to a female protagonist, I guess it could have been the same story,
mm-hmm.
in the end. But I kind of liked that it was female because a lot of the subtle points in the game played upon. I don't know. That's a very tough.
It's question. A really hard question, huh?
It is. I mean, I'm trying to think about it. I'm trying to think about all the points in the game which I played, and like, could there have been a male in that one? Could have been a better female? I don't know.
Like
I like that there's a mix. I'll say that. I like that there's a mix. I like that it's not just all male protagonists. It's not just all this Gears of War, you know, going at it type thing. I do like it's a little bit mixed, and I appreciate that.
Yeah. I like the protagonists. Yeah. They're pretty cool. I've turned around on those. So.
But yeah, the game itself, I think, is really well done. I like I said, I wish the story would have been. I wish there would have been more to that. I wish it would have been longer, to be honest. In a weird way, everyone says the game is too long.
How long is it?
But I think the game should have been a little bit longer. I think it was about. I don't remember, to be honest, right now at this point. I think it was like. I did it like in. Maybe 6-7 hours.
Really? And people say game. It's too long, or?
And yeah, but I mean, I didn't do a lot of like the side stuff that you could have done.
Right.
Special packages you could find in the game. I didn't do it. For when I play a game, I play for the story. And if the story does not lead me down, find the special packages, I don't normally do it. It's right. Very rare occasion that I do. So the story itself was 6-7 hours. I can't remember exactly right now. But I think it could have been longer and drawn upon more of the background of the characters that were in the game. And here's where I'm going to get into maybe an issue that everybody has. I feel game developers make games based on your main character and then say DLCs are going to come out later about the other characters that you play in the games to broaden the horizon on those characters. And I'm not a fan of that. If you have a game, an idea, and I would hope that if you had a idea of what your game is going to be, you are going to have all the characters, the background stories, you know, you're going to have a Game of Thrones basically on all your characters, and you would develop that game so that it was played out how it was meant to be played and not, I'm going to come back later and revisit this story.
I think unfortunately what we're at right now is we're making games that are, like half the budget of some movies, and yet we're not reaching an audience as big enough as those that go out and see these movies.
Yeah.
And they just aren't making enough money versus the amount of work that's put in. Like it's Kickstarters that make, you know, $1 million. Like it's the Brad Meier, like Master Chalice thing.
Mm.
That's a lot of money, but that's still not a lot of money.
It's a drop in the bucket. It's a drop in the
bucket. Yeah, it's a drop in the bucket. Definitely.
Like if a team of like 10, okay, so that's immediately goes from $1 million to like what? 10,000?
More.
Yeah. 100,000 for each of them.
Get the calculator out, guys.
Yeah, get the calculator out. But that's okay. Then like how many weeks can they, you know, work on that for?
Hmm.
I agree. And I wish that games weren't like that. I wish there was more of an audience that could buy into it and say, we're going to release a game the way the original director decided that it wanted to be done,
right,
as opposed to we're going to bring you into this game and then say, here's the DLC later for that. Because there's a lot of characters in this game.
Well, I mean, that's what indie games are for.
Yeah.
They look really crappy, but that's because if it's crappy, that means they can work on the story and get it done in a decent time.
True to that. And I agree. Like I said, I love indie games for their story. I love games that have a really good story and have a good story to tell, as opposed to just kind of saying, you know, hey, I'll tell you the rest of it later. You know, it's like the grandfather you have that, you know, tells you the story good night and says, I'll tell you the rest tomorrow. You know, I mean, everyone's excited for it. But for me, I want to know how it ends when you start telling the story, as opposed to waiting another time.
Wait, so I may have missed this, but does Remember really end well?
I think it ends well, but there's so much more they could have told.
Right.
On the characters that you met throughout the game that they did not tell, that would have made the experience a lot better. I feel it ended too soon based on that.
Okay. Right.
That I wish there would have been more storyline based on the people you met. I think it was a okay ending.
Was the ending what you expected it to be?
No,
like having started.
That's a good.
No,
thing.
It wasn't. It wasn't. It wasn't what I was expecting. I wouldn't say I was expecting like a great ending, like, you know, a BioShock or a Last of Us ending, which I haven't played. But I'm saying,
yeah,
you know, but yeah, but the idea behind it. But it wasn't what I was expecting, and I feel that the ending would have been sufficient if the characters I met along the way in the story was told about. There was more background to the people that I interacted with. That's about as much as I could say.
Right. I think the only other question I have about Render Me would be, how did you feel about the memory altering mechanic as it went through that game? Does it remain important? Is it awesome?
Okay, so I liked it, but I love the idea of being able to alter memories. I think it's a great idea. But the problem with altering memories in a game is that there's one path that works.
Right.
As you saw in the quick look, there's one path that works. You could do multiple things within that path to do stuff, wouldn't all affect it, or it could affect it in a negative way, which would have failed you. There's only
one outstate, whereas what would happen if you could really remix someone's life is there would be multiple outstates.
Right.
Yeah.
So something else would have happened based on what you did, not something that you have to do because this is preset, essentially.
Yeah, like, because there's some elements of it, like when because we're talking about the memory altering mechanics, so it's kind of like playing back a video with branching parts, right? It's like at some moments there's something interactable.
Right, and they don't really branch, and that's my I love the idea. I love the idea, the thought pattern behind it.
Right.
They don't really branch because you have to do it a certain way, and then that's the way the story wants to push you.
Yeah, because it's like any for example, they showed it in the quick look. There was you're in a hospital and someone's getting their memories transplanted. Don't ask, and so you can you can have like. You're trying to kill one of them in someone else's memories. You're trying to make her remember the scene as if one of them had died. And so to do that, you have to kind of reconstruct a state within this memory that would result in one of the characters dying. So you're making small changes, like you're playing with medical equipment, or you're removing like safety straps and shit like that to provoke like a violent response and that kind of stuff. Like you're doing all these things, but you get the feeling that only a particular combination of those things in a particular order will do it, even though logically maybe other combinations would have worked in real life.
Right. And other things you could have done could have changed the entire aspect of how the game turned out. And I would have loved it if they had multiple paths for that.
Yeah.
The other issue I had with the game was the Sensen, which is the device that they interact with. You know, I mean, you play as an errorist, which is told really early in the game that you were kind of like the.
Well, you play as a terrorist?
No, errorist.
An errorist.
You error on the side of terror, so you are an errorist. But essentially, you are a rebellion.
Yeah,
I know.
You are worst. Part of a rebellious group, you know? So my issue with it is, it's kind of like, okay, so you have this sense-end device that you can interact with other people, but why do you have that? If you were an errorist, why would you yourself have that kind of device implanted?
Right.
For me, it was kind of like, okay, so I have this. It could affect me if I have it, so why do I have it?
You're not a purist.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of little holes that I could have thought could have been better told or explained that weren't. But you know, and even the main character itself, Nilan, you know, goes against what she's being told throughout the game by the person who's leading her along her path, and doesn't really do a good job of saying, "I'm not going to do that." Where many times when I'm playing the game, I'm like, I don't want to do that. And I can't not do that. I have to complete, you know, go to the next level. So,
yeah, like, whereas in other games, you may be put in a situation where you have to do something, but you realize the character needs to do that to progress. This is like, right. You have to do this for reasons. And you'd like, why do I have to do this going into it in the first place? So I can see why there's
right. And I just want to say, and I'm coming off of, so this is the first time I played a big game. I guess what you call it, a mainstream game like this. And the last mainstream game I played was Bioshock Infinite. And the choices you made in the game, although slightly determine what happened throughout the game, still you had a choice in the matter.
Right.
You had that emotional rush where I'm making this choice and this is what's going to happen. Right. And then whatever happened, you know, as opposed to this one where you don't have a choice. You have to follow the rails, the iOS game rails, as I would call it, to the end of the game. But please don't get me wrong. It's a fun game. It's a good story.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. I love the scenery. I love the look of the game. I really do hope there's more DLC to at least tell more of the backstory of the characters.
Yeah.
It's worth playing. It's at least worth playing. Well, whether it's worth playing right now, I don't know. But, you know, when it goes on Steam sale, I would definitely pick it up and be one of those games that I would play and say, hey, I played it. I experienced that. And it was a story for what it was.
Hmm. I love the... And everyone has said this about that game, but I love the look of that world. And I'm so happy that some people are starting to branch out and delving into areas which you think... Like, I would have thought forever that stuff like a gritty but colorful future would have been explored in games before, but it's, for some reason, it's only taken till like now before you see stuff like the Remember Me, and it is so visually striking. But it's such like a interesting, but not derivative, but logical conclusion for what a potential future could be like. It's kind of awesome that it's finally coming to fruition
here. And I'm glad it's not based in New York, because there's way too many games.
Yeah,
based in New York.
Yeah.
You know, I'm glad they're kind of saying, hey, we're gonna go overseas for it, you know, or we're gonna take a new backdrop for this gameplay. So
more games should be
set in New York. That just sounds weird.
yeah, just in general, more games should be set outside the States. Like, I'm even though my favorite games this year have had American like sensibilities, especially Bioshock Infinite. That game is so American. I would love for more games to be just entirely like set in weird places, or like just like anywhere outside America. For fuck's sake, like seriously, do something.
There's
like
this game called Metro Last Light.
That's true.
I'm calling out for the next postal game to be in Australia.
That would be funny. Mad Max isn't even being set in Australia. Like it's
what?
Yeah. Moving on to news. Mad Max isn't set in Australia. What the fuck? It's just sad. I think they're trying to get it more congruent with the Mad Max movie remake they're doing. I think that's being set in the States. But Mad Max,
I'm really sad that Mel Gibson's not doing something in that.
I bet he'll make a cameo. I bet he has to make a cameo appearance, right?
I would hope so. At least be a voice in the game somewhere. I don't know. I mean,
yeah.
I would hope so.
So the only real news, though, fuck that shit, to talk about this week is the Xbox One stuff. We'll be quick with this because we're already at 2.5 hours or so. So Xbox, guys.
Yes.
Pretty recently, like after our last podcast, where we were pretty much glorying in Sony's ridiculously huge, massive victory over E3, Microsoft finally came to their senses. That's how I'm choosing to look at it. And abandoned all their DRM strategies this week. Like just all of them. Pretty much all of them.
Well, okay. I can say that in another way.
Yeah, sure.
Xbox finally, like after many a late night discussion, finally decided to cancel all the funding they put into like making a very Steam-esque system.
Mm-hmm.
The like probably thousands, if not millions of dollars they sent in for development, creating that whole NASA like mission control, yep, Xbox Live, always being able to make sure you're authenticated system, and because people were complaining too much. I feel bad for those developers.
I don't care. It's like the Manhattan Project. I know that there are some great minds who are doing some fantastic work, but it was for evil. Let's not debate the comparative evilness of nuclear warfare.
I think they
could have
done a couple things to make that a lot better. And I think if they put this back up 2 years later with and like start proving some sales, start like getting some traction, slowly building it up, like improving upon Xbox Live Marketplace sort of thing, I think it'll be okay.
I think you're crazy. I think
– Well, no, like the – okay. The whole – 24-hour thing is dumb. Make mm-hmm. it three days, if not a week, or a month even,
yep,
like Steam. But, I mean, like, I'm okay with, like, giving up the DRM thing if I'm buying the thing online, digital purchases.
Yeah. And that was, like, the major change. So what happened was, this week, Microsoft announced that for disc-based games, they are dropping the always-online requirements, so you can be permanently offline when playing disc-based games. You have to leave the disc in the system to play your games like you do today, but you can give it to friends, you can give it to your family, you can sell it on eBay. It doesn't matter. Everything works like it does today. The disc is the final stop when it comes to their ownership over the game, and from there on, you pretty much own that disc and the content on it. So,
which is how it should be,
and I totally agree.
They just need to slowly transition into making the digital, the like the buying it online,
yeah,
the more convenient option.
Yeah, and
so
for
me, coming from PC gaming mostly,
yeah,
I was saddened to hear that Xbox decided, or Microsoft decided to do it the way they did,
mm-hmm,
but for a person that likes, that embraces change, that embraces the way that things, the way the technology changes, I was in the way kind of happy. I was hoping they would stick to their guns. Not that they would fail, which they probably would have in the eyes of many people out there.
Like myself.
In the way they decide to do it, of course. But that it would have been kind of like a cornerstone to say, nope, we are all digital. This is the way it's going to be. And they may have failed this round with their system, and the next round may have done very well within the next 4 to 5 years when their new platform comes out.
Like the fear always has been, like the talk always has been, that there won't be a next console battle. There will be the Highlander console after this.
I don't think so. I think those people are crazy people. I think people who think a Steam box is a viable future are also crazy people. Like Steambox is currently imagined.
People who believe that Steambox, like the people who will make Steambox a reality and a viable option, are already doing it and don't need the Steambox.
Yeah,
sure. They have a PC. That's what they do.
They have a
PC
and they have it set up in some fashion to be on their main screen at home.
Right. Yeah.
And in the case of the console is slowly becoming PCs, this generation, they're just custom PCs. So in some ways, the Steambox is happening, but within these gated communities, which is how it should be. Because if anything, what happened this week, if anything, it proves that having a dual console relationship going forward is a fantastic thing for the industry. Because I bet you right now that fuck what users say, if Sony had it gone, no DRM, Microsoft would still be as they were. Like,
I guess not necessarily for the industry, but for the consumer.
I think for the industry in general. So returning back to your point.
I'm not saying not for the industry, but I'm saying especially for the consumer.
Especially for the consumer.
Because if not, the one console can do whatever the crap they want.
Yeah. And going back to Squiddle's point.
Then what's our option after that? The Ouya?
Oh, God.
Please.
Did you see that on freaking Jump on this week? Oh, my God.
Yeah, that was bad.
I think that might have been one of the best, worst TNTs ever.
Yeah, exactly.
The end just fell apart. I mean, it was a train wreck.
You mean Patrick playing a fighting game with his eyes closed, holding the controller on his head?
Like, he just did not care.
Reading just nonchalantly. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Oh, man. But, yeah, going back to Squiddle's point, though, I think that we've said this in the past. The digital future is the future, but our path to that future matters. And I think that the people who embraced... Not saying you did this, Squiddle, but the people who did embrace Microsoft's vision for how to get to that future wholeheartedly, you've kind of just been completely voted against by everyone else. And if you look at most polls, it's always been pretty much a 90% rating of people who just disagreed with Microsoft policies. So I do recognize there are 10% of people out there who didn't mind that that forced path to the digital future. It's just that I personally, and apparently most people agree with me, think that it was not the case. Like, I think that getting to the digital future by incentives, by making digital games cheaper, by having Steam-like sales, and even though Steam itself takes away a lot of your consumer rights, you're doing that with knowledge coming into it in the first place. You're not, when I buy a game on Steam, I know what I'm signing up for. Whereas,
well, it's also the people I'm handing the keys over to with Steam.
Yeah,
I am okay with.
Yeah, sure. That too. Absolutely.
I have said for a while, I do not plan on buying an Xbox One.
Yeah, yeah.
And for me, I guess you could look at it almost like a generational gap, because the last console that I really like hardcorely played was the GameCube and the Dreamcast. Mm-hmm. I had an Xbox, the first Xbox, Xbox One, whatever you want to call it. I had an Xbox 360, I had a PS2, and I had a PS3, but I never felt any tie to those games. Right. I never really felt any, I owned the games. Yeah. I played them and it was done, but I guess for me, I like the idea of having a digital library. And yeah. I've kind of grown apart from the console aspect. So, yes, I'm in the 10% out there that can say, well, it didn't bother me, but I understand that consumers that don't understand it or that don't want it were angry. And I get that completely. And I feel for them, because I would probably be in the same situation if, you know, my last generation console that I was really tied to was a 360 or a PS3.
Right.
But for me, that died off long ago. So I don't have that tie to it. My tie is to Steam. My tie is to, you know, games that I can buy online or buy through Good Old Games or whatever. Mm. So, you know, don't get me wrong. I understand where they're coming from.
It's also kind of funny because, like, for me, I was talking to you, Squiddle, before the podcast. There is a particular game, which I've recently played and talked about this episode that I'm not allowed to name, that I bought digitally on the PlayStation Store that I kind of want a physical copy of now, because I want it on my shelf. I want to have that and display it for people to see, because I think it's one of the best games ever made. So
it's a game. It's really like what Patrick said with his choice of DVDs. It's like when you have people over, you want to show them, like, this is what, like, my taste is in culture.
Exactly.
Right. And for me, I've gotten away from that. Like, mm-hmm. I used to have the shelf and I used to have the posters on the wall of all my stuff. But I've kind of gotten away from that to where, I guess my outward appearance to the world is different than my gamer appearance. And I'm not judging anybody that wants to stay with that. I wish I could be that way, but I'm just not. That's not who I am. Like for DVDs, I hate DVDs. I hate physical media. I'm not a physical media person.
Right.
But I understand and I respect the people that still like it.
Do you think some people are not don't want to buy CDs, but they are buying vinyls of new albums.
Right.
No, see, and if
video games had something like that.
Yes, that's kind of what the disc is becoming, right?
I respect vinyls.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be a disc. I want it to be something badass.
I never had this feeling until recently where I want to buy vinyls. Two Kickstarters that I recently backed on Kickstarter, they are doing vinyls of their music, and I am enthralled with that. I'm overjoyed because I really want to get into vinyls. But wait. The only reason is because there's more purity in the vinyl than there is in what I'm getting from the mass-produced disc.
Brilliant That's idea.
The only reason.
As as your item, you get a not the 3.5 the original what was 5.5 floppy disc, and on the the front of it is just this grandiose, well-crafted the cover art that you can then mount on something. On the back of it, it's just got a key that you enter in on Steam.
That's pretty funny.
To download the game.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I would be fine with that.
I think the disc would
be okay with that.
I think the disc is becoming that in a lot of ways.
I agree with you on that. I just
I bought The Last of Us on Steam on PlayStation Network, but I want the physical copy to put on my shelf. I have all this stuff.
Buy Last of Us on Steam.
On PlayStation Network, sorry.
I didn't know that was on. Yeah, where can I get that on PC?
Dude, I feel so sorry for PC only guys right now. I feel so sorry for. Anyway, that's a different.
Damn
topic.
You, Naughty Dog.
Damn you, first party studios. But yeah, it's. I like that. Now, from now on, I can look at the Xbox One, and just for its games, I can say I no longer have to worry about everything on that console not working after 8 years when they shut down the servers. I don't have to worry about discs only existing to have an install code for the digital download. I when I have something on my shelf, if there is ever a game for the Xbox One, I know that if I ever take out my Xbox One in the future, I can put that game in and play it. Like for me,
I mean, I guess two things we can use to cap on this is a lot can happen in 8 years.
Yeah.
Looking back on the start of the Xbox 360 and the PS3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. And heck, a lot can happen in a couple of weeks, man. Last week, I did not expect this to happen. Oh my God. this was earth-shattering news. I've never seen a console cycle like this. And I guess that doesn't mean much when I say it, but Jeff Gerstmann echoes me in saying, this is just crazy. That consoles haven't been like this in the past. It's never been cutthroat.
Yeah, they've always been set the way they say when they release it. This is the way we're going to do it. This is the way it is. They've never altered from that path before.
Yeah,
I just love that. It's credit to the Idle Thumbs guys for making this alliteration, but it's a presidential race. Is what this is.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's goddamn. They're both coming out in November. They're having just hot debate action. I want to have Jack Trenton versus Don Matrick in the fall.
There's freaking TGS and Gamescom to go, and I can't wait to see how this fucking fight keeps going, because I bet it's going to be a show to remember going forward. And the consoles haven't even fucking released yet.
And we're just getting closer and closer to it just getting down to the games.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Getting sold on just some sweet-ass games.
Mm-hmm. And it's not I'm going to the crazy thing is, I have said on paper, and I've said in this podcast before, the two things that I needed Xbox to do for me to consider purchasing Xbox One was remove the requirement for Kinect and remove the DRM bullshit. And they removed the DRM bullshit, and because I'm so surprised that they removed the fucking DRM bullshit, I'm actually willing to maybe get an Xbox One with the fucking Kinect, as long as there is an actual third party, Digital Foundry does a privacy analysis on that Kinect, because I don't trust that in my bedroom. It's going to be my bedroom.
If only there was some sort of website that could test, electronic and digital things.
Test is not going to do it.
But I think there is giantbomb.com that can tell you exactly how it works.
Giantbomb.net?
Yeah, giantbomb.net.
That's it.
No, actually, it's like cynic, I would mm-hmm. say just go to hackaday.com once yeah. like 2 days after the Xbox yeah. comes out, and they'll have a full review on it.
I'll be waiting on NeoGAF picking up stuff like that and proving to me that there is actual privacy settings that do work for that Kinect. But aside from that, I would not have said last week that there was even the remotest possibility of me buying an Xbox One. In fact, I said it multiple times during our E3 shows. But now, they just have to sell me on the game, and I have to have $600 in my pocket. But aside from that, I can buy one. I'm perfectly willing to buy one now. And that's awesome. That's cool.
And being one of 22 countries.
Else. Well, now that doesn't matter anymore because they made it region free as well. So now you can just import it. They've turned that shit around. It's kind of crazy.
They've done it 180.
Yeah. Yeah.
Xbox
180, man. It's the new thing. Better than Xbone. I actually like that more than Xbone. So.
All right. We are fast approaching the 3 hour time limit.
Anything else, guys? Anything else to talk about this week?
That's it. Twice as long to upload.
Right.
This.
I just want to echo one thing that Thurb said earlier. When it came to vinyl, you know, and purchasing things like that. Mm-hmm. When I was at PAX East this year, Cappy and Double Fine had a bundle you could buy on a floppy disk, essentially that had a code.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
Yeah, it had a code for Steam. You get all these games. You know, you pay this price, and I bought it. Because it was on a floppy, because I could purchase a floppy in this day and age and get something out of it. I thought that was exciting. And the biggest reason, they said, is because on some of the floppies has a special flash game. They didn't make it on all of them, but some of them they made it into when we went into production.
That's hilarious.
And that was the reason I bought it, for nostalgic purposes. So maybe
I didn't have a floppy drive.
You know, in the next,
what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Someone tells you probably spend more on a floppy drive than you would on that, like buying that disc, but that's awesome.
I would, but for me, I guess it's more nostalgia. Like for me, discs and stuff are not nostalgic enough to where I'm willing to pay the price for them when I can get them digitally, or if I can't get them digitally.
Right.
So maybe in the next few years, it'll completely change.
So do you guys think?
Like I said, time will tell.
Just as a cap on the show, some people are saying that this is all bullshit because in 5 years we'll be in the digital future. Do you guys think that's the case? Because I think they are crazy people. I don't think it'll only take 5 years for us to be able to take all games digitally. Remember, The Last of Us was 22 gigs, and that's not something a lot of people can download. And I don't think five years is enough.
As soon as Google Fiber becomes nationwide in the States.
Yeah, but that's 30 years, right?
No. I don't feel it will take that long. I feel 7-8 years max before it becomes a standard. I feel things are moving faster than people expect. Like, so as years progress, things move double the pace every year where they are, from what I feel. So in 8 years, you know, it'll actually be 16 years essentially.
Right.
What we think. So that's my feeling towards it. Hmm. That's my hope.
I don't. Honest, well, I think for us, the timetable for us getting our national broadband network, which is our national fiber stuff, is 2020 for the full rollout, right? And it's 2013, right. So it's gonna be 7 years for us to have confirmed new fiber here. And we don't know what the pricing structure is gonna be like. We don't know what the caps are gonna be like in terms of data transfer. So that's here, right? Maybe in the States it will get to the point where you guys all have Google Fiber. But I'm certain that places like Chile or Brazil or even the UK wouldn't be anywhere near the digital future in 5 years. I think there's just way too much in the way, even if things progress faster than we think they will.
Sure.
I don't know. Thurbleton, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are the freaking future is crazy. And
I want my hoverboard.
I mean, we're fast approaching the year for when the hoverboards are due.
Yeah, it's true.
And where we won't even need roads.
Yeah, that's right.
And, when it comes to making roads in SimCity, that's where, electricity and the internet all is set up for.
That's true. It's true.
The future's too crazy. I'm sure it's going to happen. I just don't know when. It definitely involves leaps and bounds. And I don't think it's going to, I don't think we're going to get, super crazy internet across the United States, much less the rest of the world, unless something like Google Fiber takes that extra step.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure Comcast could do it. They just
are making
enough money right now.
Yeah.
Why should they? Yeah.
That's why I think that it's going to take a lot longer than 5 years.
It's like we didn't get off, like, we like humanity was on whale oil up until like almost to the point of it making whales extinct. But we didn't do it because the whales were going extinct. We didn't leave whale oil because of that. We left it because there was this other thing that was cooler.
Yeah.
Right. And so
I completely agree, but, and I hate to go off on this tangent, but you have Google is buying fiber from other companies that already have it laid. Right. And they're basically subsidizing it for people in the area. So if Google has the funds, or any company has the funds to say, you know what, we're going to pay the premium so that our customers can have a subsidized version of the internet and a fast, consistent version, then it's going to happen faster, I think, than we can imagine it will.
But would you say that it would take something like that to happen before anything happens? Because I don't see the American government doing it in any way.
No, I don't. No, I see independent companies that we're going to do it, and you know that they're going to come about and say, "No, we know people want this, and we're going to bite the bullet and pay. We're going to take it at a loss, but get customers in the end that will stick with us forever because we're going to provide them with a service that they're going to love."
There you go. So Squiddle is optimistic. Thurbleton is freewheeling. He wants to see how the future happens, and I'm pretty pessimistic. I don't think we're anywhere near. And with that,
he's the cynic.
Yeah, I am the cynic. Talkfest cynic for a reason. And with that, plugs. Ending out the show, Thurbleton, any plugs?
Today's plug will be that, like, way back in February when PlayStation did the, or when Sony did the PlayStation announcement. For the Gaikai announcement, there's a guy called David Perry who's, the guy who championed Gaikai.
Yep.
He runs the company. Yeah, there's a website called TED.com, which actually stands for Technology Entertainment Design. It's not some dude named Ted.
I thought it was. Oh,
wow. No, well, it might be. It might be the guy behind it is named Ted and just made up that thing just to be clever. But yeah, David Perry did a talk back in 2006 about actually, I think it was before 2006. That's when it got posted.
Wow.
But yeah, that's going to be my link. And it's just basically him talking about video games. It's like 20 minutes.
Just post that in Skype and I'll put it up. TED Talk. This is straight up. This is the first time we've plugged a TED Talk on here. That's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Squiddle.
It's really cool. It's a cool website.
I don't have any plugs, except for maybe I will.
Giantbomb.com.
I will be the voice of Noob and say, check us out on our Facebook page.
No, not the Facebook.
Nope, that's not going to happen. It's not going to go
PC Gaming Hub, maybe.
All right, Giantbomb PC Gaming Hub by way of Squiddle. I will.
There are some enjoyable lads from across the country. The world.
For me, my plug will be... when am I going to make it this week? Fuck, I don't know.
I will say Shinboy's plug will be the soon-to-be Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, Guild Wars,
oh,
by Rhys Ousby, The Sea of Sorrows.
Oh, dear God.
It might actually be a good move, a good book.
Yeah, perhaps.
I am optimistic.
I don't have a plug for this week. I'd plug The Last of Us, but I think I already did that. So, aside from
I guess your plug will be the Massive Chalice.
$1 million
subscriber. Yeah. Brad Meir wearing a silly hat.
Yeah, that's going to be on there. I've already written down Massive Chalice Pimp video is what I've written on my show notes. It's going to be in the show notes. So aside from that, thanks for listening to us. LinkyCast/ScotchCast this week. We'll be back next week with who knows what the fuck, depending on what we have to talk about. Thanks.
Probably a more in-depth talk about Sky Pirates and how awesome they actually are.
And you know what? Probably Sky more Pirates? Talk about Lost of Us. Probably more. If Shinboy's here... probably more. And I apologize in advance.
I will push for that just to be a separate spoiler cast, just so you guys can talk for hours on end about it.
Man.
And people who don't want to don't have to download
this
it.
This has been a really good year for games. Like, really good. Holy shit. But with that...
What is game?
Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
I will swab your poop dick and kill all you to the end.
But only if you're a Sky Pirate.
Fuck Sky Pirates. bonus post-show segment with Cynic. Yay! I was planning to maybe be able to get Shinboy as he finishes The Last of Us on here to talk about a little bit more, but that couldn't happen because he's taking a bit longer than I was hoping he might. But hey, whatever, that game should be enjoyed at the pace you want to enjoy it. Aside from that, listening back to our recording, I think we could have said more about the Microsoft issues, and I definitely do have more thoughts about it, but I don't want to bore you out there with just me droning on solo into a microphone about it. But so instead, I'm going to redirect you towards two videos on YouTube that I think encapsulate my personal feelings on the matter. One's by Boogie, and I'll be putting it at, famous for his depiction of Francis on YouTube, but the actual Boogie video about it, where he talks about his feelings. And Angry Joe. Angry Joe is a bit intense, I realize that, but he actually has a pretty level head on his shoulders, and I totally appreciate his particular thoughts and opinions on the matter as well, and definitely reflect it. So, yeah, I'll be putting those in the show notes, and take that as a pseudo-replacement for extended talk about the Microsoft 180. Beyond that, I have a plug to throw on this week that I wasn't able to get to during the show. It's actually a playlist of remixes compiled by the Giant Bomb community. It's called the Video Game Remix and Remastered Jukebox. You see stuff on there like Ico represented and a bunch of Nintendo tracks that I personally don't particularly enjoy because Nintendo, but some of them are pretty cool. Portal 2, you definitely see on there. Skyrim, Metal Gear Solid is represented. And this is, again, it's not just the tracks from those video games compiled to the playlist. It's a bunch of either original tracks inspired by video games or remixed versions of video game tracks. And the list actually seems really complex. It's like 150 or so tracks, something like that. And people are still adding it to it in the comments. And yeah, just really cool. I really want to push this forward. It's on the front page of Giant Bomb, but I may as well include it in the show notes. So that's pretty much it. Instead of me droning on about Xbox DRM, Angry Joe's video, Boogie's video, and this kick-ass playlist, you'll find them all in the show notes. At the end of the show notes, I'll tap this on the end. So thanks for listening, and see you next week.